hearts and minds open, Father, and just help us to make the best decisions for our community. We ask you for your spirit to pour over our community, dear Lord. And let us serve you in all things we do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right. Oh, Dan, let's see. Oh, we've got the recorder. Dan, Jackie's going to be here in about 10 minutes, so I'll leave the recorder on here. Is that good? All right. Good evening, everyone. It's good to see a nice crowd here tonight for our workshop and discussion. First of all, we start every meetings with good things. So usually we as a board share the good things in the community, and Dr. Burt, too,
yeah,
part of it. So, all right. Who's going to start? Anyone have good things?
I've got to make it to football game this last, or I guess since we've been together.
Mm-hmm. A
couple volleyball games in the junior high.
Good.
And then, of course, the Astros, hey, man, look at where they're at. So,
yeah.
I enjoy watching them. They kind of the underdog sometimes, but they just keep grinding, right? And always stay calm in the heat of the storm, and it's exciting to watch.
Same here, a couple football games, and then Nate went to the, I guess, tiebreaker the other day, and Huffman. So, good game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have personal things. I was not here for the last meeting, and I'm sorry, everyone. It was last minute, but I was visiting my daughter, graduate of Spondora High School, in Raleigh. And she's an engineer and really successful, so we just couldn't get back on a flight. So, anyway, but it's a good thing to see your kids, so even if they're not at home anymore. So sad. Anyway, the happy thing, I went to the high school. I'm planning on visiting each of the campuses, and I just have to say, Ms. Walker, everyone was engaged. They were doing great things. I was so glad to be able to see the new CTE facilities and just super impressed. I mean, the kids, again, engaged, busy, interested, learning. It was just awesome. It just was so, made me so proud. So, so anyway, that was wonderful.
So, my oldest went to Indianapolis this week with the FFA National Convention.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, so they had an absolute blast from what I hear. And they got to eat dinner with the Jones family in Indiana. So that was a highlight for all of them, I think. So it's kind of a neat deal to hear their stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they had some kid, the national talent winner. He went viral on Facebook with his rendition of Be a Simple Man. That right there was kind of kind of neat to see.
I went to the Piney Woods Fall Festival, and it was really good. A lot of Heath and his crew did a really good job out there. Those kids needed that to just get out and have some, you know, games and festival activities. So it was a big
heard lots of good feedback on the fall parties. We went to Tylee's costume parade at Timberlake's. Her witch costume fell off, and she stopped the whole parade for 2 minutes. It was awesome. And then this past week, Mr. Lynch, Mr. Kroger, Dr. Barnes, and myself went to San Angelo, way out west. We're, as you guys know, we're part of the Future Ready Superintendents Leadership Network, and we led a breakout session on our strategic direction and some of the things that we're working on, and really had a great time. It's kind of where we go to learn about organizations outside of education and how they lead and their culture and things like that. So we get a lot out of it. We go to 3 times a year. And so had a little challenge getting back from San Angelo, but we did. A band had a good weekend, very close to getting to state, but very proud of them. Chris, I know you're involved with that with the Flag Corps, and I hated not being there, but I was with my kids at Jellystone and Waller. If you've never been there for Halloween, don't go. So it's crazy, but anyway, we just proud of the work that we're doing, and good things are happening. So.
I had one more I forgot to mention. I guess y'all seen the redistricting for the so Ernest Bills is going to be our new state rep. He reached out to me over the weekend, and he's excited to get started and get.
He's ready to come here and meet you. I had lunch with him today.
We have a coffee
and
set.
We talked about it. He's ready to come and get plugged in over here.
That's great. When is that effective? I don't know, just, okay, January 1st. Awesome.
And he'll be a good fit. He knows our community.
Yeah, he's supportive of education. All right, great. So I know we have some audience members. Just to explain, I have to read a script prior, so explains what how that all works. Participants must have signed up prior to board meeting start time. Participants may address the board on any agenda item. Participation is limited to 3 minutes to make comments to the board unless the participant requires the use of a translator, in which case participation is limited to 6 minutes. The board will only consider complaints that remain unresolved after being addressed through proper administrative channels and when they've been placed on the agenda. Please note the Board of Trustees shall not deliberate, respond, or make decisions regarding any subject that is not included on the agenda that is posted. For further information on these requirements, contact Katie Key, Superintendent Secretary, at 281-689-4441. So starting with our first request for audience participation is Stacy Lavis. And so you're welcome to come up and have your 3 minutes.
Okay, guys, I don't have anything fancy for you guys today. I just wanted to add, because I don't think I actually touched on it last and 2 weeks ago when I was here, that one of the problems with this policy, another problem with this policy, is that the college calendar drop date and the 6 week grade check fall at the same time, basically. So when my daughter realized after the unfortunate circumstances that, okay, this class may not work, this may not be a class that I should be in at this point, she was told if you drop the class right now, you're automatically ineligible. She thought, okay, well, I have a few days. Maybe somebody will, you know, the teacher will decide to help us out, give us some more grades. Somebody's going to do something because this is just too crazy to not do something. And so she did not drop the class. She held steadfast. It did not happen. She was not able to drop the class because on that Friday when she talked to the counselor, you can't just drop a class on Friday because counselors are busy. You know, they have a million things they're doing. So what happens when you drop the class? You end up with a W on your transcript. So that is another reason this policy does not work well with the actual college calendar. And so that was another thing I just wanted to point out because I don't think we even discussed that. But the UIL, TEA UIL, says that the drop policy, if a college honor student or a college high school student drops a class, they are not ineligible if they drop a class. But of course, our policy has a more strict standard on that. So I wanted to point that out. I also wanted to point out, since I've been here, we are eligible again. This has set forth a downward spiral. And that too has been unfortunate because we have, you know, our kids are in the top of the class. They are hard workers. They are kids that stay up half the night studying. They study on weekends. I had to drag her out to come because she has a biology test in 2 days and she needs every minute she can get to study. It wasn't 4 weeks of sitting on the sidelines. It was 5 because our calendars did not match up with Lone Star, which we discussed already. But it wasn't just 5 weeks, because anyone who's ever been on a team or coached a team or has any understanding of how a team works, once you are out of the game, your coach loses confidence in you. You lose confidence in yourself. Your team loses confidence in you. My son played college baseball. He played here in Splendora. And he knew if you get hurt, there's always somebody to take your spot. So there is...
She's got about 30
I'm sorry. So it has been a downward spiral, and that's been very unfortunate. And then also, last thing I wanted to say is 6 weeks is just not enough time to get a snapshot of a college student's grades. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. And we are having a discussion after,
yes,
too, as far as information from our staff. Next, we have Mr. James Sanders.
I'm here tonight basically to support these girls. I've known them for a long time, but I personally witnessed how much time that they put into the program over the last 6 years, 4 to 6 years. I think both of them put into the volleyball program and to the academic program at this school. And it truly, you know, you can cut it short and say, oh, it's just a couple weeks or whatever. But, I mean, basically, in my opinion, it ruined their senior year, a program that they put in 4 years of high school work into. And I don't believe that our district should be adding extra things that discourage kids from taking higher level classes. And I think that this policy definitely does that. Because if kids are on a borderline of like, oh, well, should I take it or should I not? And it's like, I don't know. I feel like as educators and in the community, we should be encouraging kids to take, like, to shoot for the stars. And this policy doesn't do that. The second reason why I don't agree with it is because one of the things I hear around the being around administration and teachers is basically in athletics is you want as much participation in extracurriculars as possible. This policy definitely does it. When we're witness to it taking kids out of our extracurricular programs. Like these are just two that we know of. I know of another kid, and I don't even know however many other kids there are out there that aren't. And for that reason, I feel like the administration and the school board should do whatever they can. They should exhaust every effort and possible to reverse it. So that I feel like we should be promoting our kids, encouraging them to go and achieve the highest level that they can, and encouraging them to participate in as much as what they can. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Your input is important to us as we look at this policy. All right. So we have discussion on that, and we have also the information from our staff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'll kick us off, as I know we've had. Thank you guys for being here tonight, for expressing your concerns about our current policy and some of the practices. Again, it's a guideline that's in our student handbook. I had to get that right, not course catalog. And that policy, just so to make sure everybody's on the same page, was implemented 3 years ago for a reason. And, you know, just as the superintendent and someone that's been in six different districts now, I can tell you that this policy is similar to what has been put into place in every district that I've been in regards to the grade threshold. All right, so I think there's definitely some issues specifically surrounding this situation, you know, with that professor or the teacher being out, with the video situation, and you know, whether there was miscommunication from the counselor and the campus. Those are all issues that we're looking into. So I think when we think about changing a guideline or changing a policy, we need to look at both sides of the issue and do that fairly. And I want our staff to talk about the reason that was implemented in the first place, so that everybody has a good understanding that, of course, and I think you guys made some valid points, we want our kids to participate. You know, we're here for our kids. That's the reason. It's not a us versus you guys or anything like that. It's not a win-loss. It's, you know, we want our kids to win. So at the end of the day, I think when we look at these things that we implement, you know, we need to make sure that the reasons that those things are there are solid, that they're good reasons, and that we do everything we can to make sure that our kids and our parents are informed. Right, I think that's a huge piece of this as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Youngblood, unless the board wants to say anything else before I do that.
May I say something?
Sure,
just so for the audience, yeah, too, is that I apologize I wasn't here last week or last month. I've been a counselor for 22 years and have worked on four different campuses, in high school campuses, including here. So, I mean, coming from knowing what happens and how many kids you see every day, you see all different scenarios, and any policy I think that a district makes is appropriate or from what they meet with all kids. And we talk to so many parents and us. We all review our kids' grades. We probably have Skyward set for, you know, a threshold of a 60 or a 50 or whatever. But there's so many kids out there that don't have that follow-up. So I just want to make sure that we remember it's, you know, any policy we have is based on what the counselors know or, you know, the administration knows from all kids. The other thing I want to say is that if we look at not having, I want to just say, because this is something I've been at schools, and all of them have some kind of a policy for reporting either to the principal or about their failing grades, and it doesn't all say it's just open, you know, and just follow the UIL guidelines. There is usually a policy of a 60, 10-point spread kind of thing. With AP, pre-AP, and dual credit. But the issue that many of them are looking at is saying that, and I'm not saying this would happen here, but if you have none of that, you could have a coach or band director or any sponsor say to a student, hey, Johnny, I see that you don't do well in math. Sign up for pre-AP, and you won't have any, you can go ahead and fail. Well, coach, what's that mean? I'm failing a class, I won't graduate. Well, you can make it up in the summer because you could do maybe a class in the summer and make that up. So I'm just kind of saying that there's another side to everything, and I think that we have to think about all of those scenarios, not just, you know, what just happened. So that's my two cents. So sorry, guys.
So you're saying there's ways to manipulate the system.
I think you have no, you know, and of course, I know that's what y'all are going to say, is that it sets students up for the future. And I know you guys know that too, or you wouldn't be here, because you care about your kids and you care about their future and you want them to know when they're at home, when you're monitoring, that you've got that kind of safety net for them. You know, and I think they're looking at the process, that the policy, that there are those safety nets here as well. But in the old days, there were things, and that's why people changed it to show
GPA chasing. And
yeah, and that's, and as we grow, we have to look at all of those scenarios. And I'm just saying, I'm giving my input. Normally, I'm very quiet about building in finances and things like that, but I've seen it work.
I have a lot
that
of
way too.
Specific ones, but I think I want to wait.
And that's what I think suggests the next is have our folks just, you know, talk about it. Sorry, I just figured I'd throw my piece out while I can still think.
Thank you, because you kind of set it up for kind of history and you're going back. And Dr. Hoisington is not here. She's at the assessment conference. And Dr. Hoisington, Ms. Archer, and I 3 years ago sat down because we
can
didn't
speak
have,
up a little bit.
Sorry, we didn't have anything in place. So it was kind of a free-for-all, like it was fail as many pre-AP classes, fail as many dual credit classes, and we did have kids manipulating the system. They were coming in and they would have a 19, a 0, and decide to drop the class early on, and so not do anything going forward, and then wait until the last day it drops, which is later, past the grade checks. And so they were eligible, but failing four classes. And then it would be too late for them to go into a regular class, so they would go into credit recovery to earn the credit, which is bad for NCAA purposes if they intend to go on, because they don't like the online courses. So you've got that to factor in. So it's not a great way to get an education in credit recovery if you could have that in the classroom. And so we called, made visits to lots of different campuses. I was with Ms. Archer earlier, we were talking about how many years we've been in education. And I've never really stopped and figured mine out. I did the math, and I think I'm on 28, maybe 29. So that dates me a little bit. Prior to, no hands, no fun, but every district that I've been in, like Dr. Cook said, has had some kind of waiver system that allows for some flexibility for kids who were taking that extra step, because we want them to take that extra step. But we also don't want them to have four failing grades in the courses that they're in. And so how do you kind of measure that out? Or what's good for everyone. And so, you know, even with my own kids that were in athletics, and when they were, my daughter was big in art, and she was in the art club, and they followed the same UIL guidelines, but with the cushion for the 10 points. And so that's just kind of been the standard for most districts. And I think what's happened here is unfortunate, and I really, really hate that the girls missed that part of volleyball. And my condolences, my sympathies, my heart breaks for you for that. But I think it was an unfortunate set of circumstances that fell in line with COVID, having the fall break that we've never had before, the 6-week grade check. I mean, all of those things just kind of lined up, like when, you know, all the bad things align and the stars align, and it's the perfect storm. I think that what we've experienced is the perfect storm, and I don't know if there's a real reason to change the procedure that's been working for 3 years. And when we got to the 9-week cycle, we only had 4 kids that became ineligible because of dual credit at 9 weeks. And 2 of them were in dual credit, and 2 of them were in MVP courses. And so, I mean, all the kids that we have in our college and dual credit and MVP courses fill a very small number. And so I think between the 6 and the 9 and the fall break, and that 6-week check is just, it's always awkward because it's not the end of the grading period. And so you kind of roll in, and you got to check that 6, and with Dr. Zong being out and with COVID, I think the 6 rolled in sooner than anybody expected. And I don't know, at this point I feel like I'm rambling. So, but that's a history of why the procedures were put in place. And that is because we expect great things of our kids, and our kids do great things. We want them to be ready when they go to college. You know, they can still drop after the 6-week period. And so ideally, you know, they would have had a 60 at the 6-week period, decided this is not working, and then we drop, they're still eligible. Unfortunately, the grade was only 60.
So here's my, I guess.
Sure.
Number one, I don't ever recall this, I don't ever recall a student dropping this many classes or signing up, and I don't ever recall that being brought to my attention that this was something major, the kids were just taking advantage of this. And I think for me, if we have coaches that are doing that, we've got a bigger problem. If we have coaches deliberately signing kids up,
I didn't say that we had coaches signing them up. I've never seen a coach deliberately do that. What we saw was kids sitting and failing multiple courses and not dropping until that very last day.
How often was that happening?
That's been 4 years ago, so my brain's a little...
Well, you said like there was more instances this year, or kids that were affected this year. Was it more than that per semester before the policy was...
Yes.
And
I mean,
it was,
I'm not sure I understand your question. Would you ask that again? There were 4 that became ineligible at 9 weeks.
This year. Okay. And then, prior to this rule being in place, was there more than 4 kids manipulating the system?
More than 4 kids failing multiple classes in place?
I'm not sure all the rules, forgive me for that, but is there some sort of like standard that you have to be at in order
James,
to...
I'm sorry. I'm board secretary, and we have very strict guidelines on conversation that's happening right now. So I apologize. You had audience portion, and I'm sitting here thinking, how am I going to fill this out to send to the state? You have audience portion, and then it's a board meeting for them to have the discussion. And I have some of those questions. So just know that, okay?
Thank you,
I just know that I can't sit and fill out the open meetings information with that. Sorry.
Thank you for calling.
I was kind of having a little panic attack. So. Like,
and
okay.
maybe
if
through
you have questions, call outside the board meeting. I'll be more than happy to talk to you anytime.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dan, I know. Then do you have questions?
So here's where my question goes. If a kid is unsuccessful,
no, you're okay.
Unsuccessful in the course. So worst case scenario, kid signs up for a bunch of classes, fails all of the classes. They're not going to get in another advanced course at that point, right?
No, then they go into either credit recovery or a regular on-level class if we have it. And
so they have one shot at taking advantage of the system in that sense.
Yeah, but what's the detriment, Dan? I mean...
They could technically stay in all year and fail all year and be eligible all year without any guidance.
Yes.
If they fail one semester, we're going to give them an advanced course in the next semester?
But AP would be a whole year. Dual credit is by semester, but AP is a whole year.
So we'll leave them an AP even if they're...
It would be against my best educational advice, but if the parent chooses for them to stay, then they stay in AP courses.
It's not like it, the old days where, you know, just a certain percentage of the kids, and you knew the kids who were going. It's open to anyone.
It's open to all.
And they're encouraged. Because a lot of the kids who aren't recognized as the top students, when they take the PSAT or another test that, you know, and they do amazing on, you encourage them, or AP really encourages them as well, to take a chance and to do that. So that's how it's supposed to be set up. Or anyone could say, hey, I want a challenge, and then sign up. So they're not.
Well, and the taking a chance is very much, yes, my concern. Yeah. Right? I mean, take a chance, but if you fail, or if you score 10 points lower, sorry, your athletic, you know, whatever your extra, well, right now, as our current policy, it's only UIL, it's only athletics.
Yeah, I definitely think that has to, that has to get fixed.
Yeah, the ag follows the UIL guidelines, and cheer and drill team does follow under the same capacity.
So I keep hearing that we looked at other district policies.
Huh?
That was a mistake.
Okay, so, yeah, so it should be all extracurricular regardless, yeah. No, I know what you're saying, but did you hear what Loydette just said? And she said cheer and dance too, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's not what happened, and apparently.
That's not how the policy is. The policy says UIL, period.
It does, but it's a.
The UIL side by side, it lists cheer and drill team at UIL.
And does it list ag too, though, or ag just chooses to honor that?
Yes. I think to make sure that everyone is informed and make sure that there's equitable application of that, we can change the wording of that guideline to include all extracurricular so that doesn't happen.
Okay. That was,
you know, we don't need parents to go, well, where do I find that? It needs to be clear.
That is going in the wrong direction. But,
okay.
I started looking, so we keep saying, well, let's, other people, other districts, this is normal. So I did some Google searching for about 2 hours, and I found College Station, they don't do this. Sweeney ISD, they don't do this. Silsbee ISD does not do this. Plano ISD does not do this. Mansfield ISD does not use this practice. Round Rock ISD does not use this practice. I looked for Georgetown. I could not find where they referenced the 60 at all.
Yeah.
Most of them say, look at the UIL policy. Some of them have some little caveats, like New Caney's didn't list. Well, I found two different documents for New Caney's. 3 years ago, they had the list of all of their courses that accepted the waiver. And then in their current document, it says dual credit. Any dual credit is waived. So everyone, there's a gamut, yes, of here, but everyone's policy that I looked at is more flexible than ours.
Well, you listed about 10 of them, so
within 2 hours, that's about how much time I had to commit.
1,200, yeah. I admit, but we have to look at, I mean, you're looking at data, and we're saying you found those, and if there's 1,200 in the state, you pick some.
Yeah, but I picked the ones that showed up at the top of the search.
Loydette, were you all able to get any of the questions that answered that I had sent in before? So, because I, to James's point, I was curious.
I think those went to Susan.
So those were about to drop the...
Yeah, well, I was curious, though, how many at the 6 weeks. So I don't think that we just open it up. I just don't. I think that we're accountable to you students. And, well, okay, here's my speech. I'm just going to give my speech. The UIL does not care about Chloe Lewis. They don't know that you came here and that your first year at Piney Woods was the first kindergarten class to go all the way through. They don't know that how many siblings you have, or that you have a brother that plays ball or any of these things. They don't know that. We do. We're accountable to you. This board is accountable to you. Part of our accountability is caring about your education, right? If we open it up and say, oh, we're just open. Chloe just failed 3 college courses, and guess what? That impacts Chloe in a way that the UIL just doesn't care. They just don't care. They don't know you. So why would they care about dual credit? But we do, and we do encourage dual credit, and we encourage the whole student, right? We encourage athletics. We encourage ag. We encourage all these things in addition to dual credit. We don't have, a lot of schools have, you're in this track or you're in this track. We don't do that. We want it to be all. But we can't just open it up and say, in my opinion, hey, what happens, happens, right? Because there are repercussions going down the line. Did anybody look up, because I know that there is, and I should know this because I have two kids that have already gone through college, there are so many classes that you can fail, and then you no longer are eligible for state aid and other things. So if you fail three, if it's three classes in your whole college education, and you fail all three of them while you're in high school, but you still got to play volleyball, then what did we do for you? Do you see what I'm saying, parents? Like, we're accountable to you guys.
That's not a realistic scenario.
It is a very realistic scenario.
How do they keep signing?
Because if they're in four classes in the first semester, and at those four, now I'm not saying that the 6 week or 9 week, I think there's definitely some adjustment, because I'm not sure how all of that's working. And like that whole break in the middle there, I'm not comfortable with that whole, it's either should count or it shouldn't, because I know that there are other students that got dinged because we tell them they should be able to take a break, and they take a break, and they got in trouble because they weren't at practice, you know? So I think that there's some things that we need to do about that break, and then we say, oh, well, the break didn't count here, but it counts here. There's things, this being the first year for us to do that, I think there's things to do there. But it is a very realistic scenario that, and I'm just always going to use my kid as an example. If Honor were in, you know, these three college classes, four college classes, and she's failed all four of them, do you think that she would be playing softball for college? Probably not, because NCAA has rules, right? They have regulations that they're looking at. But not only that, she would not be able to get, is it state aid that you don't get after dropping so many, or you can only? But yeah, there's only so much you can get, right? Yeah, and so there's, right, and then you've got your GPA too. So then can they even get into college? Because we allow dual credit, but we said, oh, well, we're not going to keep up with whether or not you fail or not. And then they don't have a 2.0, and they can't even get in. And then parents are going to say, nobody told us that. We didn't know that. You know, I mean, and that happens all the time. I mean, people call me all the time asking questions. Oh, I didn't know that. Nobody ever told me that. Did you read any of it? You know, so I feel like we have an accountability. We have a responsibility to these girls outside of athletics. And I think that's where you get that 10-point cushion. Now, can we adjust? I absolutely believe there's pieces of that policy that need to be revised. I don't know how to make it all work out, but the 6 week thing, I mean, y'all are even saying it's confusing and creates.
The 6 week check is hard. And I mean, Brandy and I worked together in another district when we went to a 9 week. And so, I mean, we've been through the whole 6 week check, and it's always hard because there's no end of the grading period.
Yeah.
You know, the urgency for teachers to get their grades done by the time the marking period is done is 9 weeks, but then we're on a 6 week eligibility check from UIL. And so I think we could have done a better job communicating that and making sure we're all on the same page. And, you know, that's confusing for teachers as well as students. I know they printed eligibility calendars this year. We made one of those for the first time. I don't know if you've seen them. They're all the big, just like our school calendar.
Yeah, it's an
eligibility calendar, and it has those dates on it. And I know they made some poster size, and they have them in the locker rooms and around the school. And it's just, I think, again, back to the break, I think it was unfortunate that this is our first break. And my suggestion for next year is that when we plan our calendars, we do our eligibility calendar, our school calendar, and our grading calendar all at the same time. Instead of doing one,
yeah,
and then coming back and trying to work around that for eligibility.
And I think there has to be more discussion, too. I don't agree with just throwing the policy out, because I think that it really does, it has some checks and balances in there that are for the benefit of our students. But I do think, though,
we went with the four. Like, if you're in dual credit, they're waived. If you 6 feet or above, a lot of districts will go one, and you know, you have to apply for a waiver. You have to meet with the principal agrees, signs the waiver, just like 3AP.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to put those stipulations on our dual credit classes. We just wanted them to, you know, be at a 6 to 8.
I do think, though, that there should be some, because remember one of my questions was, what happens if, and I think there's just so many of these, you know, I'm a workflow girl. Mm-hmm. Dr. Barnes, I love you for this. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what if they did this? What happens there? So what happens if the professor hadn't even put in grades, right? Like, so I think there's some opportunities that we should have, with this professor, and especially in this situation, with knowing that he had COVID, at the 3 week mark, I need your grades and I need to see where these kids are at, right? And then how is, and I did ask y'all, but I never got a chance to see, was there a syllabus that said that this one test was going to be weighted at X part of this, right? And I don't know the answer to that. I'm stating this. Just things that should be looked at, right? And so, and again, I bring up Tempe. When Tempe was here, she was on that so closely, and I don't know if we have the capacity or resources for that, or if that's what Miss...
Hoisington?
No, not Dr. Hoisington. There's a new...
Miss White?
Miss White. Maybe that's what she'll be doing, but, you know, again, Tempe, when she was here, that first cohort, she would call me and say, hey, I'm not supposed to tell you this because, you know, it's a college professor, but I just looked at Heather's grades and blah, 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 blah. This is what we've got to do. Because she did know that Heather cheered and all these other things, right? So I don't know if we have the resources and capacity for that, but I think that I don't think it makes sense to throw out a policy altogether that makes sense and really encourages education. That's what we're here for. But I do think there's opportunity for tweaks.
So would it make sense to tell every kid that's in athletics that they need to make an 80 in every course that they have?
No, but then they could make a 60. But does it make
like a
well? You know what?
Very
I would.
Difficult course.
I would ask what is required for college, right? Forget about the UIL because honestly, the UIL is not accountable to our kids. So what do they need? What's the minimum GPA they need to get into college? That's where that threshold should be, right? Because we don't want to just say, oh, go do all this because you want the risk and the reward, right? I mean, you do. There's a great reward here, and just say, well, there's no risk. Because the educators and administrators should know what those risks are and should have those thresholds in place that you're not going to hit that. That's not going to happen. So I do think there's opportunity for tweaking and keeping everybody education first. I don't think throwing it out is the right thing.
So help me to understand. So some of this discussion happened last time, right? So what are the new points? Because I don't want to
rehash that was some of my questions.
For me. But I know, you know, we could talk about this all night and
well, I think the main thing is we're setting a bar higher than UIL sets. But only...
Forget about the UIL.
Yeah, I, you know...
The UIL's not concerned about their college. I mean, they're just not...
I mean, if you want to raise the bar, let's make every kid make a 9. I mean, it's totally up to us.
Were you able to have any of those numbers? So how many students...
There were 15 that became ineligible for dual credit and AP for 6 weeks, and there were 4 from that.
And was that because there were more grades in, or do we know?
All dual credit total.
That's huge.
Well, I want...
Some dropped after the six-week period. So once you get to the 6 weeks and you're eligible, then you can drop. So some of those went from that were in the 60 to 69 range. It may have dropped, of course. I didn't look at every individual kid. I just heard the numbers.
Do you know what the percentage is? 15 out of how many? That are in.
I can look that up and see how many we have enrolled, but I did not look.
And there's no way to know how many kids won't take a course now because they see these kids going in. That's my
what
concern.
What are you going for? I mean, I sat down again. I always use Honor as my example because I'm not going to use some other child. Okay.
I
sat down with Loydette for 2 hours one day.
Some of these districts, they let you have 2 drops. I mean, there's room.
But you have to look at what are you trying to go for? Are you going for that associate's degree? Is that what you want? Okay, if that's what you want, then there is a higher rigor, and there's a reward here, right? But it comes with a risk. It's like saying, well, I'm going to buy a lottery ticket, but only if I win. No, I mean, there is a reward, and there are risk
it's
in.
It's like buying a lottery ticket and then getting slapped out the door when you lose. That's what's happening. I mean, it's a double.
I don't think
so. The fact of failing, that alone is that's the deterrent, right? Nobody wants to sign up to fail. Nobody should.
But at what point are our educators responsible for being the ones in the know to say we have a problem here? Because otherwise, kids could go sign up for every one, thinking I'm going to go and GPA hunt. Can you remember this with Bree's year? Hey, I'm going to go and do all these. I'm not going to go over to the college because I'm going to play the system, and you know what happened. I'm going to play the system and get more in.
Within administration.
But do you see what I'm saying though? Now kids could go and say I'm going to sign up for every one because I'm a GPA chase and I'm going to try getting that top 10% and I'm trying to be the number one. Da da da. But hey, because there's no risk in that. And then what happens when they fail 3 of them in the first semester? Previous administration, yes.
Do y'all have anything else that to add to the discussion as far as that you want us to know to add to this? Okay.
You were going to say something about the, so when you mentioned the compromise and the drops, you were going to say something, but you didn't say it about drops that we allow.
Well, they still have the opportunity to drop, but you have to be careful with drops.
But they got,
that's another thing. You can only drop so many classes.
But you got, you can drop after the eligibility mark, not 2 weeks before, or you're automatically ineligible.
No, so that's our policy.
You got to be careful when you drop.
That's our policy, telling them that. Mm-hmm. The UIL says it's totally up to the district.
Advanced courses.
That's right. So we could say you can drop an advanced course with no penalty UIL-wise. Because one of them, I don't remember who it was now.
But then
one of them, I think it was Sylvia, actually. For each student to be in a dual
class.
Actually, it's College State. That's their policy. You can drop a course, and they don't hold you accountable. You know, they don't
say that again.
Dropping advanced class does not cause loss of eligibility.
What do we pay for the dual credit courses? Per course?
Do we pay for the dual credit courses?
No, because they let you drop. If you're failing, you can drop.
This question way better than I can.
We pay the fee.
We pay the fees, and we pay for the books, and the tuition is covered.
By Lone Star.
Lone Star.
But we're still paying the fees and the books, though.
And the books.
So we have kids, and then we just say, go drop, then the district's out, too. So I'm not saying the money's not the end-all, be-all, but there are other things, there are other factors in this as well, especially if there's no check in here. It's just go and sign up for as much as you want. And if you feel like you're going to fail, pull out. Well, that impacts, again, it impacts college. It impacts, you know, your go-forward plan. It impacts the district. It impacts your education. I mean, there's just...
I guess we have a different view of what people are wanting to do in education. I don't see, and I still fail to see that people were taking advantage of this.
Well, I'll tell you, in high school, it was the same problem in Cleveland. When we initiated that policy, it was just a bunch of kids signing up for AP. So I could make it through football season, and then I would drop out. So we kind of changed. It was kind of very similar to what we have here. And for ours, it was only one class. When I was principal, you could fill one class with less than 60. And get your waiver, get down to a 60 to get your waiver. If you did two, you were in the eligible. So it does kind of vary. And I think another thing to keep in consideration is at 6 weeks and 9 weeks is two different situations. Like we talked about, when like Dad mentioned numbers of Mr. Zong, he has like 37 kids. You said at 6 weeks, how many were failing?
There were six.
And then at 9 weeks, you only had two. So two kids out of 37 is not a, you know, we don't want any kids to fail.
And how many kids dropped?
Wait, stop it, go back.
Well, it would have been out of, you know, that was, if you
had, but he says six
left,
out of 37.
Whatever the number is, as a left. So I think the bigger argument would be, just to add my little, it matters in it all, that we have to teach kids how to utilize their resources. That's the key. Because one of the things that is a challenge of a college class in high school is, like when our kids go to college, like we tell them, hey, you take 13 hours. If my son has 13 hours, that's it, because I feel like that's what you can handle in your freshman year in college. And so what we're asking kids is, hey, take four college classes, plus four regular classes, plus go participate in outside activities. That is asking a whole lot of a high school student. And so what we have to teach them is, how do I utilize my resources? So let's say in this instance, when Mr. Zong is not here, okay, what other math teachers can I go to get assistance for my tutorials while he's out? You know, who can I go to get help with my paper? You know, those are kind of things I think we have to work on teaching them, because those are college resources that our kids have to do once they leave us. So I think in high school, we have to help them with that so we don't get to the point where kids are failing. And it's not a policy change in a sense, it's how we go about supporting them.
So the situation at hand, the kids are doing great on their daily grades. So why would you think you needed additional resources?
And it would, because you're...
If you're making all A, would you think he needed to go get some extra?
And I would tell you, his first chemistry test, he said, Dad, I made 90 on the quizzes we took. I went to all the sessions. I went to the tutorials. He said, I made a 70 on the actual test. I said, well, what was different? He said, well, I don't know what was different about it, but it was different. So I said, well, now we have to do is we have to figure out how we're going to study smarter. Because you went to the tutorials, you took the quizzes, you did all of that. That didn't get you what you wanted. So how do we help you get better to get to that goal? That's what I think is going to really benefit our kids, is how they help them get.
But hang on, Dan. I know that we don't have oversight of the professors, but if they're our teachers, right, could we, because you're right, in this case, how would they have known? They had all A's. How could they have possibly known on that one test that it was going to kick the way it did? Can we put some sort of requirement in place that either professors do a test early to give them time for remediation, or that very first test that's 25% isn't until after?
That's why.
Because it's the 6 week. Because at the 9 week problem, but Dan, at the 9 weeks, there was two students, right? But it's at the 6 week period, and that is when you've got the primary, you've got football, volleyball, cross country, all these things going on. Is there a way? Hang on. Is there a way? Can we do that? Is there a way to put some sort of measure in place?
I know that we can put the measures in place as far as you can't give a test here, here, and here, because they do have to follow their Lone Star syllabus and whatever the grading guidelines are for Lone Star. What we can do is do a better job of educating the teachers and make sure they're aware at that 6 week mark.
That's what I have written down here too, is how do we avoid four grades? Because to me, there's something that's to me is injustice from the instructor. How can we give these girls or these kids a false sense of 90s, and then a test right away? When that to me is an injustice on that instructor. That's not treating these girls fair.
Because I believe we hire good instructors. And I believe that we should have faith and confidence in them, but I believe the policy
if they're not here for 2 weeks and they do that to these kids, that's an injustice on that instructor. I mean, that's a major part to this puzzle. They were led on a false hope that they're doing good when they have all A's, and then you come back with no instruction and they give them a test. That's severely unfair, and that's part on that instructor. That's a major part to this discussion that we're having. What the policy is
it's not the policy per se. It's the situation.
The situation is that the instructor really didn't do these kids any justice with doing what he, you know. How can you be gone for 2 weeks and come in and hammer these girls with the test and then be like, okay, that's going to be for 25%?
Because he's got to deliver at the end. He's got the whole semester. It's a college level course. He's got the whole semester. That's why the 6 week, 9 week, that don't work on a college level. That's why there's no, that's artificial numbers.
So we throw out the dual credit college program because
I'm going to sum it up and then I'm going to just call the question, because at this point I think we could go on and on with this. And some of it was, and you were here, Alan, you want to say anything that's different from the discussion on the 18th?
It's more on the call of question. Are you closing the discussion for today, or are we waiting for some feedback on a new policy?
We're aboard. So I mean, that's what we need to look at. Is that as from just here being here tonight, I'm hearing different things. One is that that the policy is there needs to be some firming up of that, as far as that goes.
Some clarity,
thank you. Mm-hmm. And to clear it up to prevent that from maybe happening again. I'm hearing from y'all that it's a situational occurrence, perhaps with this, because of all of the things that put in place. You called it a perfect storm.
I would argue that it needs to be a little more flexible. That would be my... And I get it. I think there's room that we can give a little more grace on occasion, but not to be exploited or not to be taken advantage of.
Has there been discussion before I came in about a waiver, a one-time course waiver in a year?
One of the policies I read that said that they get two shots. They get two shots.
Because I can see. And so, Dr. Burke, I know that...
I'm taking notes. Go ahead.
Well, so did you have a recommendation coming into this meeting, though, or was this more discussion?
No, I think just in looking at all this, I mean, you know, and I've talked with several of the parents as well. They've contacted me. I think there are certainly things as a school district that we could have done better. We, you know, my thing is I want our kids to accept challenges. I want there to be some reasonable accountability for those. But I don't want our parents or our students to be caught off guard, right? I mean, they need to be informed. I mean, I remember taking dual credit in AP and I was in athletics. I mean, but I was fortunate my parents were, like, on the campus. Like, they were there, they knew the system. Like, I think we have to be very clear about what our expectations are, what our policies say, and they shouldn't have to go and search for these things and wait to get when there's a timely issue, right? And I think the fall break coming in, the six-week grade check, we have no control over that. That is a UIL thing we have to do. So at the end of the day, you know, I think they're, like, changing the policy to, not changing, but clarifying the language in the policy so that it is clear, so that we don't have the situation where we have one student sitting out and you're seeing somebody cheering on the sidelines, and that's kind of like a slap in the face, in my opinion. That's something we can control. So my recommendation coming in was to say, okay, look, let's consider where we can be flexible. Like, we were flexible with senior night, right? We've got the same situation coming up this Friday for football, and I think that's a dumb rule. Like, Dr. Barnes and I talked about that today, but that is a UIL rule. It's a dumb rule, but there are avenues to change that, right? So, for example, I'm in contact with UIL to ask, like, why do we have the situation where you get a week off and you can participate? I know exactly why we have that. It's because basketball coaches, I'd advocate for that. But during the holiday break, you want your kids to be eligible. But when you miss a week and you miss 3 weeks or 5 weeks or whatever, somebody's going to take your spot. That's just the reality. I mean, it is what it is. And, I mean, I was an athlete. All of us were athletes. A lot of us were. And I was a coach. I've been through these situations as a player and as a coach. It's not fun. I was going to say another word, but I decided not to say that because we're being recorded. But, we want our kids to have good experiences, right? I mean, that's what we're here for. We're here to make sure that, you know, y'all are entrusting us with your kids. And we take that very seriously, you know. And when we look at things like policy, when we look at things like our practices, you know, you don't want to make a decision on one situation, right? You need to look at the history of this. We need to look at the implications moving forward and the ramifications therein. And most of all, I want y'all to feel heard, right? I want you to know that we understand and we empathize, and we're going to take a good hard look at our practices, the way we communicate, the way we inform, and the things that we can do to make sure that our kids and our parents understand that there are certain risks and consequences when you take this course or when you take that course, right? But at the end of the day, do we throw, so to speak, the baby out with the bathwater? Is that the right phrase? Mm-hmm. Sorry. So I'm trying to change my dad. So I just think there's a lot of things here that, you know, that we can become emotional about, and we can, you know, because it's your kids, right? And I know both of them, right? I do, and I want them to have successful seniors. That's why I made the decision to let them participate in senior night. Okay, the situation as it played out was unfortunate, and we have some self-reflection to do as a district to make sure those things don't happen again. But I'm not prepared. I mean, when I came in, I was going to say I don't want to change the grade threshold because I've seen that work, right? But are there things that we can do to be more flexible, you know, to your conversation? Are there things that we can do to change the policy to where the wording of that policy to where it's fair and equitable, right, for everyone? Did you?
I just want to say that I don't think any of us want the policy struck. I think we see a value in it. But in this situation, there were some other things that could have been done.
Dr. Burke, here's my ask. I have two asks.
Sure.
Actually, I think I have three.
Sure.
Will you look at the ramifications when we're looking at this policy of one, providing a one-time waiver?
Okay.
Like, what would that look like? What would that have looked like this time if we could get numbers, right? We did that, Lloyd, remember you did that when we were looking at the GPA thing years ago. So if we allowed a one-course rate waiver, this might be a logistical and administrative nightmare, so forgive me, don't mm-hmm. throw daggers. What if we didn't, because the UIL doesn't care about dual credit, what if we said at the six-week mark, the one mark that is so hard to quantify, what if we didn't acknowledge dual credit at the six-week mark? And I know that might be an administrative nightmare, but that's the part
I would get, for the dual credit, I'd go to the full semester. And I only say that because I think even these two young ladies I believe they would have had success in that class if they stuck.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, 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 but if you go full semester, then they've already, whatever's happened, like, it's done, because it's only a one-semester class. So I'm just saying, if UIL doesn't acknowledge it, and 6-week period is a difficult one to really monitor, what would it look like? And I know, because I'm thinking, oh, God, that would be an administrative nightmare. And my third thing I would look at is, do we have the resource capacity to have someone that is really, again, I hate to say it again because I know, but the role that Tempe served back then, what we couldn't have, I don't think that our dual credit program would have been as successful today as it is if we had not had a Tempe back then, because these kids, it was so new to them. They don't know what's going on. You know, they don't know, Dr. Barnes, and I'm with you. They don't know to go talk to the professor, how is it that I had all this or what have you. So do we have the resource capacity in a role that can really monitor that at like a 3-week, a 6-week, and talk to the professor, dude, you've been out for 2 weeks. Why would you do that to a kid? You know what I'm saying? And have that engagement and collaborative conversation. So those are my asks. Is what would the ramifications be to do something to the policy that, whether it's to the policy or to process?
But I think that last question is really
way
amazing
out there.
But mm-hmm. We have kids who aren't going to graduate because they're failing their core classes.
That's true.
Where does that part end? Because, you know, I'm working at a place that senior has 15 credits. Yeah. So those kind of things.
Yes, if we're going to have, resources, then yeah.
We're talking about
top kids.
I'm with
you.
You know, and about that kind of thing. And I just want to advocate for all kids, because honestly, that would be great if we had all parents checking their kids' grades all the time, not just for eligibility and not just the top kids. Because those.
Remember back when Tempe was here, you know, I think Zizi kind of took over that role when Tempe left, maybe somewhere in there, checking on the kids, on the grades all the time. But we had a separate standalone early college.
Yeah,
school,
you're right.
With a
you're right.
Dedicated staff.
Yeah.
And so with the combination of the integration for dual credit purposes and the school support complete and all the changes that we have happened since that time.
And she called you, but she may not have called anyone else.
Oh, she did. She called every parent. She was adamant that program was going to succeed. But I'm not. I'm just. Yeah. I'm asking for some options. For administration to kind of come back with, how could we? I know. I don't think I don't know. but what are?
She just whispered to me that there were about 30 kids in there too.
This is probably true, but.
I had the opportunity to go over to the high school and talk with Ashley because I wanted to try to get the big picture of what happened. And as a result of that conversation, we know that we need better protocols and processes mm-hmm. in place. How are kids tracking their grades? Mm-hmm. You know, is it 3 weeks? How are kids tracking their
yes.
grades? Do they have to go with a grade report for each teacher at the 3-week mark to get their grade on the paper, right? I don't know. So we know that we can do things better. The other thing that she mentioned that I think is a great idea is to have a semester orientation that goes over everything, eligibility criteria, when you can drop a class, how you track your grades, when there's tutoring available. So all those things that so kids, we're doing a better job of communicating. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's on the radar, and we know that we can get better at some of those practices, and we do need to get better. So I think that's where it is, because I love what Suzanne said, but what about the other kids? Because mm-hmm. they need the same
that's true.
Support,
yeah. That's fair.
No matter who you are, right? So we need to get better all
the way
around.
I'm going to say it one more time, and I'm sorry. I go back to Dan's thought, though, on at least a waiver, because in this situation, this perfect storm that happened, I mean, really, they went in with an A up till that last test.
Yeah,
I mean, that's messed up, really. I don't know what else to say about that. And so it was that the professor was out, and it's that 6-week mark. And so, yeah, we give that 10-point cushion, so I keep thinking that in my mind. But if my daughter has an A going in to that 5th week and in week 6 without any opportunity to make it up, I mean, because at that point, what other grades are going to be taken? And she's hit with a test that's 50% of the grade or something. That's, I mean, college kids aren't ready for that, much less high schoolers. So if there's, I'm asking what would be the ramification. I know what could happen as well. Then somebody's going to say, well, how come I can't have 2 waivers? And how come I, but for those perfect storms that happen, yeah. So could we expand that to period? Anything that's outside of the regular courses that you get a waiver that covers that it just happened kind of thing, because it does sometimes just happen.
I just want to say it as a comment. To me, I know that the policy is there for a reason, and I don't, in this case, the policy failed these ladies in a way that, how do we protect that in the future? Because I think the policy is in place for the reason, but in this case, it absolutely was unfair to these girls. We can't strike the policy because we need the policy. So that's a discussion for us, is to know how do we prevent this. That's something that we need to vote on. How do we change? I mean, because that only needs to be changed, but the policy is there for a reason. And without a doubt, I think we all agree that there's some tweaking that needs to be done so we can avoid this.
We can certainly visit after this and bring your recommendation to the November regular meeting, but I think Mr.
I just have one question, though, just for clarity. How many kids, students, was in his class, Dr. Zahn's class?
37.
And then in 6 weeks, you're saying six of them failed?
Nine. I think it was six, and then two at the 9 weeks.
So that we know six athletes failed.
No, we don't have six people.
So those six extracurricular failed that test, that class, in 6 weeks.
Well, some might not.
Six, period. Not just in extra. It could have been somebody that wasn't in an extracurricular. There were six students that failed the course at the 6 week period. Yeah. I don't know how many. And I don't think they knew. And then two at the 9 week period.
On the college course, that's why, to me, I mean, because professors are setting that up. They should set it up. And we want them to set it up like a college course. Well, a lot of times, your points come at the. You may have a hard test up front, and then. Your final might not be a hard test, and that might be what brings you up to it. So, I mean, that's why on that one, the whole 6 to 9 week thing is.
Yeah, I think there's. Can I add one more piece to it? And I'll be done, I promise. Can we also, Dr. Burke, look at that week of fall break and how that is impacted? Because I think we've got some inconsistencies. You know, we tell kids, hey, it's fall break, enjoy your fall break. But there's still practices going on, and they're dinged if they're not there. And then there's, oh, but we're still, because you're not supposed to be here, you don't have to be here, it doesn't count for eligibility. I think there's some opportunities to cinch that up.
The business of athletics doesn't stop, and I made that clear in the junior high meeting and in the high school meeting. I mean, we can break whatever we want, but we're going to continue to have games. We can't just...
So what's the point in having a break?
Christmas.
I mean, but what's the point in having a break then? Because parents can't take their kids on a vacation, because that was one of the things we promoted. Honor was up here every day for practice, but I mean, we weren't going anywhere anyway. But
that's no different than you play basketball. I mean, through Christmas break.
Then what's the point in having the fall break? I mean, they have to be here.
Where you have to
5 days that you have to have.
We're making the choice to take the winter break.
That piece is, but you know, those days leading up to and those days after, I mean, you've got to know.
I think it's a separate.
You want to play sports.
You think it's a separate conversation? But it impacted eligibility, though. That's why I was bringing it up.
That's not our role.
So I also just want to acknowledge what Lloyd had said about the fact of all of those pieces that go into where kids are advocating, and then, you know, Tammy as well, you know, where those pieces where everyone is advocating, being advocated to raise their grades. Because it is, you know, it's going to affect not only athletes, but whether someone graduates or not. So I think if they know the rules, they know when they have to check on everything, that it puts them in charge, and then the parents have the information too. So I think that piece is essential. We could change the policy all day, leave it out, have everybody sign it electronically, and then nobody knows. I think the important piece of that is the going in that intervention and letting kids know, and repeating it every year, because sometimes you have to hear it 4 and 5 times for it really, or it has to actually happen and affect you. So
I have lots of follow-up and lots of notes. So.
And understanding this is probably more than a two-week thing.
Yeah, we can't do anything until the semester anyway, so let me work on this. I promise you guys and parents and everyone's there to thank y'all for advocating for your kids and supporting our kids. We are taking a good, hard, earnest look at this, and we want to do what's right, so we will do that.
All right.
Go ahead.
Last time you were talking about, or someone was, about the first 9 weeks, how it acts different
And once they're eligible the first 9 weeks, they do not become ineligible until the end of the semester. Mm-hmm. And so we have the entire semester to figure out planning this. Because no
is the spring semester the same?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Once they're,
I was thinking the first 6 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, once they're eligible in December, that goes until the next grading period. So it's by 9 weeks.
Yeah, so the 6 week period is just the first year.
That's the beauty of the 9 week check instead of the six, because on the six, you can lose. Does that make sense to follow that?
There's three grading periods in a semester.
But if we get past the six and we get to the nine, we don't check again for
9 months.
But that 6 week piece has to be done via UIL, that first 6 week check, and that's where we have to make sure that everybody understands the ramifications.
The schools that maintain the 6 week policy is.
No, the UIL makes us check at 6 weeks.
UIL does, but whether or not you acknowledge dual credit is a district policy, but UIL, period.
They make us do a 6 week check. Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. All right. So. Just for notations purposes, 6:37. So, discussion over, no action on number 7. Number 8 is a workshop for human resources.
Take a break.
I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. Everybody would want a break so we can reconvene in the back. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Dad.
Follow-up questions?
No questions.
Thank you so much. Cassie, you've gotten so skinny, I kept going, that is Cassie. I really did. I was like, that is Cassie, I know it is. You look so pretty. Good night, y'all. Thank you for coming. I hate bringing up Tempe because I know she was not the most loved person.
No.
But, you know, she did do good in that group. And, yeah, there were only 30.
That was all she did.
Yeah. So. And that's kind of why I keep going back to that. But Susie is right. I mean, that's one little group.
But it's a valid point, too.
I mean, it was... I don't think our program would be as successful.
When she did it. She did a lot of that.
Oh, she did. She sure did. Yes.
She did. Her responsibilities expanded a little bit.
Yeah, but you're exactly right.
She did have more to do with that. Yeah. Then when she left, they kind of, things were restructured a little bit. So, you know, and there's so many things that come in that expectations change. Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
Have a good
day. You too. All right, I need water and coffee.
Bring it out here.
Yeah, I'm just bringing out this.
So shorter the math side of that. Thanks, Ray.
Okay, man. Appreciate you. Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm sorry about the agenda review thing. I got that.
I could care less about the agenda review. It was on my calendar. I was like, but it's not on here. We can't have an agenda review.
We can talk about it. I was next to it. It's not like we're going to do all these things.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to do an agenda review. I could care less. It was just when I looked at it, I was like, wait a minute. It's not posted. So,
It was our fault. I got confused.
It's all good.
But I think, and I'm glad he said that.
There's opportunity. There is. And I do want. I mean, I know the fall break thing is new, but there should be some consideration.
There should be.
They went on vacation, but So I think it's just in the inspection of the deck, right? It's brand new.
My thing is that this policy is.
She would not go back. She'd have her way. She was like, so we're going to come back and go work coming back on the same days. So I think we're all going to go back on Monday, Tuesday. Because, and I see her point, why should she be in office and doing Zoom with everybody at home, right? So I think for those that elected to go back, we'll go back on Monday, Tuesday, and then next week.
Is that for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm so set up, like, I have my laptop, my docking station, my extra monitor. I mean, I have a big executive desk upstairs. My printer's behind, I mean, I'm...
What else do we want? Glasses.
Other than the dog.
Because
the dogs start barking and they make me anxious. I mean, I'm in the middle of...
No, I was going to reference something.
Or I'm on a Zoom call, and then I'm trying to hit mute, and so, and then...
Had my video.
Your answers
were our questions. Those answers were only there because they were set up as such high quality questions.
That's true. All right.
We're actually doing a little skit thing tomorrow. My group is under more Zoom, and so we'll help people with different things that we're going to do. You know, it's going to be, it'll be tough.
Trying to
get on a Zoom, have you ever tried to edit a video and share sound?
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we're going to...
Like, it goes crazy, and so, yeah.
My bad, I'm so sorry.
No, please, go ahead.
So just apologize for the faux pas on the agenda review portion of tonight. So Katie did print out our proposed agenda for November. So at the end of this presentation, we always talk about agenda items for next meeting. So I just wanted to point out something. We can talk about that here. It's not specifically posted on the agenda, but we're not taking any action on said proposed agenda item. So if there's anything you want to add to that, we certainly can. We will not have a curriculum presentation next month. I was telling Suzanne today that, I hate to say I'm going to get emotional. In December, Dr. Grierson will be presenting her final synopsis before she leaves us unceremoniously.
Right,
so,
but...
I love you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have to approve those, though, right?
Well, there's nothing we can do. So,
she's leaving.
Yeah, she's leaving.
It doesn't matter if you approve it or not. It doesn't matter.
So, but she is, she's going to talk about some of the design work, where we are on the curriculum management plan. And just to let you guys know, I know there's a lot of anxiety from our teaching and learning department. There's a lot of anxiety that some of you expressed to me. We are meeting next Tuesday to kind of talk about, and Tammy, Glenn, and Kevin and I are just talking about, what's next for that department, right? So we have some ideas. Tammy's done a lot of work on kind of thinking of different ideas, and she has assured me that she will be available for some contract work starting in February. So I don't know, yes, so, but we'll see how that goes.
Did you get that in writing?
Uh-huh, in my head I did.
So on the transition plan?
I will. So we're working on it. Now I have some thoughts in my head. But my main thing is I don't want to disrupt the work we have doing, but I do know, so yes, we will have a plan that I will present to you guys. I have thoughts and options in my head. It looks like a choose your own adventure.
What is your date, though, Tammy? 31st.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds really only 8 weeks to put a succession plan in place.
Well, I mean, but it doesn't necessarily mean we have to hire somebody immediately. We have some...
Okay.
Sounds like we're just going to switch to contract.
I did tell her she could come in just Wednesdays and just work for months. She didn't want to take it together. Right, anyway.
Yeah. When we sit back there a couple weeks ago, she was saying how she really just enjoyed the fall break. I just said, hey, look at this. It means that you're going to get so much to look forward to for spring break.
But we will have some options.
It's not even a spring break, is it? Isn't it a winter break almost?
It's a winter break. I just torn up about the news.
So Brian is going to, so as you guys know, we generally audit one or two of our programs every year. We just did an HR audit when I first got here. We did an HR staffing audit just to kind of look at where we were with growth coming up. So this was more about our HR department. What are some things we're doing well? What are some areas that we have to improve? And kind of look at that. So when we were in St. Angelo last week, his eye
I have a virulent left eye.
Yeah.
At which point on Thursday, it had started to hit me on Monday, and we left Tuesday. And on Thursday, it was as red as that background, like it was a demon eye. And so I told Dr. Burke, not to be that guy, but I'm just going to wear my sunglasses constantly. And he's like, dude, I wish you'd have done that yesterday.
So, and then when we landed, we're getting our baggage. We had a really rough trip back. But when we landed, we flew out of Bush, but we had to land in Hobby for lots of reasons. Our flight in San Angelo got canceled, so we had someone from San Angelo drive us to Midland to fly back on Southwest. So Kim met us at the airport. We got back at the same time.
What a mess.
We just didn't have a connection. And we're getting packed baggage claim. He's chewing on something. He chips his tooth. But anyway, so tonight we're going to talk about, he's going to go through some of the results of that audit. Really we wanted to do that to say, okay, where are some, we do this with every program. Where are we doing things well? Where are some gaps that we have? And really looking at it, as juxtaposed against the growth that's coming. Like, where do we need to think about expanding that department in the future, reassigning some roles, responsibilities, things like that. And so what you're going to see, especially when we get to the findings part, is if we've just put in kind of the opportunities for improvement. There's lots of successes that they highlighted. But I wanted to focus on, okay, what are some things we need to work on and look out for? And then the action plan that we have for the next 3 months and 6 months, that just for context purposes. So we're also going to talk about our strategic priority 2, which is staff engagement, well-being, and growth, and really talk about some of the things that we're hearing, from our, not just internally, but also things that we're hearing just in the industry, so to speak, of public education, right? And some things that we've talked about internally about, when we think about competing with other, for teachers, because here's the thing, they're not signing up to be teachers. Like, that pipeline is not, as full as it used to be. So that requires us to think about things in a particularly kind of reflective and innovative way. Do we focus on growing our own? And we're not just competing with other districts, we're competing with other industries. We're competing with staying at home. And I texted some of you guys that when I was at TASMUS, it's a real problem. So we can't go back to thinking about the way things were before the pandemic. It has completely transformed everything. So we need to think about, and so we're going to talk about conversations we've had about a 4-day work week. Not that we're wanting to do that, but just, I know you've mentioned it to me in the past. I think we just have to think about all these things, right?
Yeah.
And so just for discussion purposes, that's going to be in there. But I'm going to take the balance scorecard piece and talk about that when we get to it. But anyway, Brian, go ahead.
Well, first off, I do want to lead off and say, Tammy, I am going to miss you because she is an incredible mentor, and you've been, you've been an exceptional friend to me when you've been here. So I will miss you, but your office is cooler than mine, so I am going to moving into it once you're out. It was very, very good going to the Friesland event, even with a bad eye and a broken tooth, because you realize, you're talking with all of these great districts throughout the state, and we all face the same problems. And you think that someone like, you don't think you'd ever be able to learn something from Wichita Falls ISD, but you learn something from Wichita Falls ISD because you learn how they staff some schools. And Dr. Burke and I are looking at each other like, this is crazy. Like, they have like 14 elementaries.
And they have like 350 to 400 kids in each elementary.
Yeah. So how do you think of utilities and costs like that alone? So thank you very much for taking me to the conference.
We also realize that things are not nearly as bad as you think they are.
Yeah.
Wichita Falls, to go on that, they are consolidating campuses, right? Because you can't operate effectively under that. So they're having to go from 3 high schools down to 2.
Really?
Because they don't have enough.
They're losing students.
Four of their board members walked out of the board meeting the other night over mascots. So that's what we don't have it that way. Like, we have good conversations and discussions, but when you go to these things, you realize, hey, we're doing good work. Everybody's got issues, and like I said to you guys before, like,
you know, this is, and you mentioned this year up before the meeting, like, we're the closest thing people have to government, and there's mistrust in government. And so we have to do all we can to make sure that we're communicative and listening and all that kind of stuff. But you said something about this is the new battleground as we get into the bond.
Yep.
But all that being said, like, you know, we find a lot of value in doing that, and I want to give kudos to Brian and Kevin and Glenn. They presented we had a breakout session, and they presented on, you know, our work from their perspective and, you know, a strategic direction. And we had, you know, Grapevine College asking us for stuff. We had Roy City ISD asking us for stuff. We had Coppell. You know, so it's this generative thing where, you know, we all have the same challenges, but we all learn from each other. So thank y'all for allowing us to do that.
Just
a
question.
Sure.
Wichita Falls, are they losing because of COVID? The charter schools? What's the
just lack of people moving?
People aren't moving there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was one of the last session I went to with the Texas State of Texas economy. They had a chart that showed the shrinking counties and the growing counties, and parts of the state are shrinking. Yeah, pretty interesting to see. Yeah.
People moving out of the state, moving
out
of
here. I'm going to send it to a friend of mine and say, hey, now you know where to move. Everybody else is leaving that place. And I will say that in our sessions, a lot of people were there because they had seen us at TASA-TASB. And the board's presentation, so that was
something. Well, so we are currently staffed with four people, myself, Leanne is my secretary, Laura is half-time, she's half-time compensation specialist, she serves as Mr. Lynch's secretary. And then we have Ms. Hernandez, who's our benefits and leave specialist. So in September, we did a new HR audit. And obviously, we're going to have to undergo an organizational redesign just with the sheer growth coming. One professional, two paras, and one half-time employee with currently close to 700 employees is not going to be able to cut it. So here were some of the major findings we'd like to talk to you guys about. On departmental organization and management, we talked about developing strategic goals and measurable objectives for human resources. Redefining the structure, increasing staffing levels, and reassigning responsibilities, and of course reviewing and updating procedures to ensure alignment with the policies. Technology played a major part. Now keep in mind, a major part of it was supposed to be Skyward Cumulative, which we do not use. We use Ascender. So we need to increase our automation to streamline HR processes, train HR district staff on the use of systems and applications. On workforce metrics, staffing position control, initiate a plan to accurately predict staffing needs, which is going to be absolutely crucial once we get into the big time growth that's coming. We're going to have to use metrics to help identify trends and manage the workforce more effectively, specifically the workforce that we already have, not the workforce of the future. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. And identify strategies to maintain a stable workforce to cut down on the reduction of people leaving our district or our profession. Under personnel records management, ensure all personnel records are complete and accessible. Implementing systems to ensure records retention schedules current. Under recruitment, certification and employment. Developing a proactive recruiting plan and timely hiring processes. Refining the teacher transfer process and give guidance to principals, supervisors, directors. Identifying improvements for application process, a job-related screening process, and implementing an efficient and effective system for induction, orientation, and onboarding of new staff.
Yeah, let me say something about that piece. And that, you know, when we're talking about those proactive recruiting plans, it's just not going to job fairs anymore. Like in the past, we would go to job fairs and we'd go to, you know, the Texas, like we went to one in the spring or the summer,
And how many people were there, like?
Well, there was probably 100 applicants in every major district in the Region 4, Region 5, Region 6 area looking.
100 applicants. So it's like when we're looking at this, it's like, you know, when we talk about our District of Innovation Plan, right, where we allow for flexibility in certifications, those waiver certifications for CTE and things like that. You know, when we're looking at who we're targeting, most specifically, like, you know, our Ready, Set, Teach program, and we're going to talk about T-Class in a minute, and one of the decision points we made for the residency piece, like growing our own people, and we got a good, I think it was Roy City that was talking about, we were talking about that this afternoon, about they have a Ready, Set, Teach, but they also have kind of a system where their pairs are going through education classes, and that's part of what we're doing for our residency plan. Because if you do that, then, you know, there's a difference between induction and onboarding, right? Induction really means those things, like who we are as a district, and then there's the onboarding. And Suzanne and I even talked about this too. I was sitting with Rick Westfall from Keller ISD, and he showed me what they've done. And I started thinking about this with induction of leadership. And it was, we've had new AD, new principal, you know, things like that, and did we have time, and did we have a system set up to where they're learning who we are in the best possible way, right? I mean, so it's being reflective on that, but, you know, there's a couple of districts that do a trustee induction. Like, it's not just a new board member comes and meets with me for a day, right? It's like, what are some things that we can do? And it's like, they've dedicated a whole Google site to trustee information resources, so y'all don't have to go look at these. You don't have to go look at the handbook and find this policy. So we're going to be working on kind of getting that set up. So just looking at, you know, people don't leave all the time because they can make more money somewhere else, right? They stay or they leave because of their workplace conditions and how they feel about their boss and how they feel about the district and the job they're doing and all that kind of stuff. And so when we're talking about recruiting, it's not just about going out and finding people, but it's also about recruiting the people that you have continues to stay here, yeah, especially in the building.
So, yeah. Can I ask a question? Yeah, absolutely. What's your range on recruiting on teachers and such?
How far do we go? Mm-hmm. So I will tell you that just from data, Sam Houston is like our bread and butter. Like, we get the absolute most from there. After that, you're kind of second and third kind of goes between SFA. And I'm talking traditional programs. So I'm not even
talking local state.
Yeah, yeah. SFA, yeah. U of H, and then we pull the occasional kids from Texas State and A&M.
Yeah. But to that point, I was talking with a buddy of mine that's in A-Leaf. He shot back on a 5-day recruiting tour in the Midwest.
So you know, if you remember the Milliken trip, she was saying that their teachers are starting at 35,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe that is something we look at.
And on there's a counselor blog on Facebook, and they're talking about transitioning from state to state, from another state to TRS, because that's a critical thing. That apparently that there's some ways to tie in their state, another state's retirement with Texas. Right. So those things are happening too. Mm-hmm. So that's going to also, because you can't just leave if you've got, you know, 20 years with South Carolina. Absolutely. 30,000 a year, you can't just ditch that and come here. So apparently there's some agreements being made.
And I volunteered to go to Puerto Rico to recruit.
You just put those in that Zoom class, right?
To say all that, we are going to be looking very intently at how we expand that effort.
Right, because I always, when I speak to, like, Katie, my colleagues and Katie, like, they hit the Midwest, they'll hit Indiana, they go places like there. But I'm like, so what's the return on investment, right? Because that's not a cheap use of district funds. And they're like, you know, you can get commitments, but it's the commitment that is actually going to be there to come and do the move, set up, take the job, come to Texas, you know. But we're going to explore every option because we have to.
Where I've seen the most success with that kind of situation is where a district, let's say in Texas, has a relationship with a university. Mm-hmm.
in one of those states. I know all of them had that for years. They had a great relationship with one university, and I don't remember what state it was. And so I think those are things we need to look at too, because they're guys, they're just not coming.
What about South Texas? We really, do we look at that?
It's so hard to get those folks to move away from.
Valley is super hard to get people to move from.
I would maybe look, well, like with Frank and Val, if you're on, and when we, anytime we attract a business, let them know that we have teaching positions available too. A lot of times, one spouse will move for grad work.
We're gonna open up this, whatever.
And you joked about Puerto Rico, I'm sorry, Jason. You joked about Puerto Rico, but honestly, they could come across without any of the immigration issues. And their economy is really horrible. But Venezuela's great, but then you've gotta do all the immigrant, we lost a great Spanish teacher because of that one time, from here. And because of the follow-up of that. So I think you don't have to deal with that in Puerto Rico.
So are you entertaining paying for moving expenses, is that part of your?
So that is something we're definitely thinking about. Something that I know that Dan has said before, and I think is a strong idea, is all these developments coming in, let's talk to them and say, like, look, if I can get a teacher in here, can we work something out, you know?
That's what my question was with that academy over here, is there a, that's all rental and
half of them. But they do stuff already for first responders and you know, things like that, and so maybe.
I mean, yeah, I think teachers are a pretty reliable group that you would like to live in your subdivisions.
From March to March, especially if we work a deal for like a 1-year lease, get them here, and then you know, we're.
Well, I mean, whatever we do for renters, we do for. Because I prefer home buyers, but my thought has always been, you meet the developer or the home builder, and then maybe try to get some incentive funds, and then you piggyback our own in there, and you know, make it. Partnership from the office.
Yep. So, like, if it include moving expenses and you know, 10% off whatever, you know, where they're getting a good.
Yeah. Somebody fresh out of college, I mean, they buy a house for 3% down. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, our findings continued administrative support and customer service, increased methods to disseminate information and process transactions. Provide supervisors with self-service capabilities, train and support principals and supervisors on HR-related issues, on the grievances and investigations piece. That was a success for us. We're very good at how we handle our grievances in the system, and happy to say that as of right now, there are none in the pipeline. Compensation systems and administration. All of HR, the design and implementation of compensation plan, create a pay practice procedure for all personnel, and provide high quality employee communication on pay and benefits. Yes, ma'am.
Go back to grievances.
Yes.
Are you saying there are no open grievances right now?
On my side of things. I don't know about the student side.
I'm asking teacher grievances. I'm hearing a lot of bad comments coming from the high school. And I'm saying a lot. Mm-hmm. So you haven't had teachers coming to you?
I have had 3 teachers come and talk to me. And I've shared my findings with Dr. Barnes.
But there's not been the official.
They're not official grievances at this point.
No one has put pen to paper yet. No, ma'am.
So we are getting ready to roll out surveys for all of our campuses. And so once we get those surveys back and. Again, I'm not going to speak to any of that because no one has said anything to me, whether that's they want to go through the systems or whatever. But when we have new leadership, things change. And there are some good things that are happening on the campus that that we're seeing from our side. But we want to make sure that we get the voice, you know, from our employees as well. So that's what I'll say. And we can talk about it right now. I mean, it's part of the HR stuff.
We're talking about teacher retention right now, and if what's being reported is accurate, come December, we're going to lose a lot of teachers. I can't quantify.
Yeah.
We are going to lose teachers because they are very, very unhappy at the high school. So I don't know what's been, I know that I was told that some teachers are starting to come talk to you, and I was told that there was going to be another one this week. And this one is going to be listing names of teachers who are saying they're leaving. And so, I mean, I'm hearing that the conversations are starting, and they're starting to come to the administration, which is exactly what I'm saying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to administration. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay anonymous, well, I can't say anything then, right? So you have to take accountability and responsibility, go to administration. And so I understand there will be another one this week. And so I'm just saying that I don't know what they're saying. Yeah. I don't know the gist of the complaints, but something has to be at least reviewed, because how many teachers are we willing to lose?
Yeah, but I'll put this in the context. Elena, in her first 2 years at Peach Creek, lost about 70% of her staff. By putting in, and I'm not saying it's a good thing or bad thing. Carrie lost 18 last year.
But can we afford to be losing teachers right now?
Probably not. So we want to take those complaints, and we're going to listen to them. I just want, like, everybody to...
I get it.
Well, they're putting in higher levels of accountability. And do you want to talk about some of the things that you've seen?
Yeah, so we did our first walkthrough with the instructional folks at the high school last week. And for the first time ever, we saw CKH happening. So every classroom I walked into, I had a student ambassador who took my hand, looked me in the eye, welcomed me to the classroom, and said, "This is what we're learning today," and asked me if I had any questions. And that was all at once. And so I was going to say it when we came back into the debrief, but I wasn't even the first one that said it. Everybody there said they saw the same things happening. So that's a real positive that's happening. I also know that they have some teachers on their radar that they have high levels of concern about and should have high levels of concern about. So I don't know which teachers you're talking about, but there are some that they're working, they're putting on growth plans, and they're trying to work with to support them to see if things that change can happen. But there is a much higher level of accountability than I've ever seen. And so with teachers that have been there a while, and they've always, like one teacher who got a change in her schedule, said, "I don't teach on-level kids," and she's teaching an on-level class. And so I know she's very unhappy with that, but it just showed she was very entitled. And this is where we needed her at this time because of the scheduling and things, because I know scheduling has been a real issue for her this year. So, I don't know if
it would have anything. This is an issue. When I came, I was told that high school attendance, teacher staff attendance was a problem. And I know it's one of the things that we focused on. We tried last year, we just couldn't get the ball rolling like we wanted to, so we put some practices in place. And I know that's probably gone up, I want to say, 3 or 4% already this year. And, the newness of change happens. You know, I know some people feel like, and I always, nobody's going to meet yet. I've heard about that, and I always tell them, the first step is always, if you have an issue, talk to your principal. Like, I want my teacher to come and tell me if you have an issue. Let's see if we can work it out. And if we can't, then it kind of goes into, we talk a lot about, be sure we're clear and trying to clarify the message. I know that they are really teacher-friendly still. They do a lot of things for the teachers, recognize them, rewards, all those kind of things. But, also in the end, it comes down to what's going to be best for our kids. People got to come to work. And when you come to work, you got to teach from the time the bell rings to the time the bell doesn't ring. You got to love on the kids, and it has to be a priority. And so those are the things we're pushing, and I know it's going to make some people uncomfortable. And, but if it's best for our kids, that's what has to happen. What I would tell anybody is your principal wants to know when things are not going well. So they need to, voice their concern with the principal. Like, hey, can we sit down and have a meeting and let's talk about this and see what my concerns are? Because nobody wants anybody to leave. That's definitely not the option that we want to have. But we also want to make sure our kids are still going to get the
job. And it's all in the right thing. Just send them back to us. We want feedback. We want to get better. I know she wants to get better and leave that campus in a better way. I know there's been some things that that rub people along.
I think that accountability is all a good thing. Okay, so give me some examples.
Sure.
Apparently, the drill that happened. Just recently, was it?
Maybe it was shelter in place.
Yeah, the shelter in place drill that happened. Apparently, that didn't go the way the principal principal had wanted it to go. And so the next day during the announcements, basically she demeaned the teachers during the announcements, saying how that will not happen again, XXX, you know, basically put it on the teachers, and was talking down to the teachers, to the students during the announcements, essentially. That's what was reported, right? So that's one thing, that she has a very demeaning, kind of condescending tone. Well, so-and-so, what did you expect to happen? That sort of kind of tone, rather than, well, did you ask so-and-so? So I can't validate. I'm not there. I'm truly, and I am telling you've got to go. And I'm all the beggar. Look, she's saying, well, I don't want you to serve. I'm like, well, then what do you want me to do? You know, like, I mean, what do you want me to do? You don't want me to tell your name, but you don't want to do the survey. You have to do the survey, or you have to start having those conversations. So I am doing that, but I'm just hearing it, and that more and more people are coming. And so I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not saying that it's because we're holding accountable, or there's some attrition that needs to happen. But if we see in December where we lose a lot of teachers, are we ready for that? Is the district ready for that?
Well, one, no one's getting released from their contract.
You might not be happy, and she might be mean to you, but we're not letting you go.
You're not letting anyone out of their contract in this summer.
Can you say that one more time? She's retiring. There's a difference.
But please encourage people that are coming to y'all to come to us and voice their concerns. And, I mean, Student Voice Management Association.
Yeah, I haven't heard any specifics, especially from teachers, and I haven't really that even specifics. I'm hearing a little rumbling.
It's somebody's moving their cheese, so I get it. Like, somebody moved their cheese, so there's some rumbling. I mean, the kids were rumbling at first, you know, but I think that it's the approach, because you said it a minute ago, people don't typically leave because of pay, right? It's you want to feel appreciated, you want to feel comfortable in your environment, et cetera, et cetera. I know, I mean, I have followed bosses that I just love, right? And there's been times I haven't gone for a position because who is the leader, right? So I think it's more not specific to certain incidences. I think it's the overall feeling of not appreciated, the tone, the condescension, the not really caring about teachers. It's more showboating, and that's what one person said. Yeah. Like, the new principal, it's all about me. It's, you know, and not so much about teachers. So I think that's the overall perception. Okay. But I've only heard from a few. And some of it's not even the principal. Some of it is the AD. I'm hearing some pretty negative, aggressive comments about the new AD as well. So I think the overall, when you have a new AD and you have a new principal, and a lot of cheese is being moved, there's a lot of discomfort.
It's more than 5%.
It's a lot of discomfort.
It's change they can handle, right?
So I pray for that piece for Randy. Dr. Barnes is taking Randy and Chief Weatherly and Eric to do the leadership blueprint training so that they understand the Excel model and how that works. Yeah. And, you know, as far as the Sharia is concerned, just tell people, people need to be honest and serve. Like,
I'm
all day. I don't have time to go through them and try to find this.
We are not going to backtrack IP.
I was going to say, too,
in regards to the surveys and everything, I meet with the secretaries and the receptionists and the frontliners all the time, and that's one of the things I keep trying to tell them, too, is because Dr. Burke wants to know what is happening. That's the ultimate thing. Yeah. And we don't care. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to act on something, but he wants to know about it. And so I hope.
Well, I know that too. And in Sparity, when they send out a survey, they want to know what department you're in, how long you've been there. And I'm like, well, you can pretty well narrow this down pretty quick, right?
It is anonymous.
Oh, right. It is anonymous. But I don't think that happens here.
This is a comment to go along with it, too. I've heard rumble about retaliation for years. People are always scared about it.
Yeah.
I can't outwork this one because of the retaliation, or somebody's always. Yeah, I mean, I've heard that, not just.
That's just
over 3 year time. I mean,
we're going to work on what we can control. Right, we're going to provide the opportunity. We're going to meet with whomever has a concern. We're going to do everything we can. I'll say the same thing to our teachers, and I said to our parents tonight. Like, we want the feedback. We want to know how we can get better.
Like you'll see in part of this, we want Spencer Wheeler to be a preferred place in which to work and work with. You know, we have to earn that trust every day. And so if there's an issue with the way we're treating people, then we need to address that and make sure that we're all living by the Excel model. We're all going by our values and principles. If it's not working, if you're not doing it, you can't change. You don't have the will to do it, then you're not going to work here. So how, you know, we have to, you know, in some of those situations are more difficult than others. So, but that's what we're working towards. So please encourage people to come meet with us, and, you know, we'll listen to any concern you have. I don't know a better way to...
No, I'm with you. I'm just voicing it that...
Yeah.
Either there's some change or there's going to be some change. Yeah. Like, there's got to be some conversation or there may be some change.
Gotcha.
Last bit here is leave administration substitutes, employment procedures, communicate leave benefits to employees, implement processes for monitoring leave balances and use, and strategy and implement strategies to recruit and retain a sufficient number of qualified substitutes.
Is our substitute pay still high? Is it still
kept
the
it high.
Higher rate? Than
and this is to change, right? To improve?
Yes,
or
to improve.
Okay.
So let me add one thing that I was going to say when we went through it, but the policy that we had asked y'all, if you'll go back a slide.
Yes, sir.
I want to find it. Go back one more. So implement timely hiring processes. So that is one thing, that's the reason that we brought that policy change. I understand why we didn't want to do it in the midst of this discussion, is so that, you know, not with administrators, but the teachers giving me that flexibility in the middle of the year to hire when we can. That's the only reason for that, right? So that we don't miss out on a qualified applicant. Because we have had more teachers this year retire at the semester. Some of that could be related to the principal, but a lot of it's related to they're just burnt out.
I think some of them
we
were
coming back.
Sure,
but at the same time, like, and this is what I heard Gail Stinson say, who's the superintendent at Burnville. So I have not said this. She said that, you know, 80% of our profession is women, and they're seeing their peers and friends work from home, and they don't have an opportunity. If you think about it, we were the first ones back. Mm-hmm. In education, we didn't have time to decompress. We didn't have time. And so, you know, what is the, you got to make this a place where you're not stressed out all the time, right? People want to be with their kids, and the situation with COVID allowed people to see, like, hey, this is maybe better for me. So we're fighting on that, right? And so that's just kind of...
The thing that we hear more and more is a good work-home-life balance. Work.
Yeah.
People don't want to be up here until 7, 8 o'clock at night doing grades. You give them a break.
I'm all about a fall break, as long as it's really a break.
But anyway, so keep going, Brian. I'm sorry, I just wanted to point that out.
Why'd you look at me like that? I'm all for a fall break, as long as it's a break.
As it's a break, it's a break.
So we've got some short-term goals that we are working towards. Three of them we're hoping to get accomplished by November 19, 2021, I'm happy to say we're making really good progress on all of these. So this is aligning goals with the strategic priorities of Splendora ISD. So I've had meetings with all of the principals, been meeting with directors. And truly what we're trying to look at is building an onboarding process for new hires through the completion of their first year. Because I'll tell you, we're very good at prepping them up through the summer, beginning of the school year. The late hires after that, it's kind of like, you're in, come on, you get a day with me, here's all your paperwork, here's your benefits, now get in there and teach those classes, because they've been at 32 kids in that class since August, and I've needed you yesterday. So we got to get better at that.
How do we do, how soon do we bring teachers back?
This year we did 2 weeks prior
for curriculum planning or
curriculum trainings. So they do trainings during the summer for trade days. So first 2 weeks of that February break are trade days. So if they come to professional learning through the summer, that earns them comp time to take those first 2 days off. So that's all choice for them, right? But we brought everybody back. I think it was it 7 days before, Tammy?
We had 7 days.
Yeah, and a lot of people said that was really beneficial, like, because last year we only brought them back for 5, and so there's always this push and pull between, you know, district training, campus training, and planning time. Like, we know they need more plans for them.
That's
for us. So we're looking at that. We're looking at how much are we requiring with lesson plans, I mean, all these things, like things we can control, and the way I framed it to the cabinet the other night is, look, if we gripe about the state all the time pushing things down on us and not trusting us, are we doing the same things to our teachers? We need to really take a step back and look, because there's one thing all teachers want more of is time. And there's no way to give them any more time other than strategically abandoning those things that aren't absolutely necessary. So we're really trying to take a look at all
this. Does student teachers help with any of that?
It's been hard to find student teachers, first of all.
Correct.
Because everybody shut the programs down. But we do have a relationship with Sam. I tell you, the lifeblood, and we had this conversation last, I think it was either you or one of y'all talked to Kevin when we had this conversation at the last board meeting. Like, the lifeblood of support for us is our parents.
Right.
And we don't do something to up the pay for our parents and keep them and give them opportunities to advance. Like, that's our biggest, I guess, our biggest asset.
So, my wife, she's getting emails from schools. For, you know, she's got certifications, secondary, not yep. teacher certifications. They're approaching people that are working at these facilities to,
yeah.
for their parents and all of that. Because, and, you know, Carlisle SD by face, I don't know if they're paying for that.
Well, we're going to have to, we're going to be outside of the TASB salary schedule on that, but I think that's something we
can
do.
I don't think you can pay them. Especially like your special ed.
What about giving them an educational opportunity?
We're doing that.
Yeah, we're getting covered.
Yeah, we're doing that.
Money and?
Yes. And then improving notification of start date of new employees. So we use Eduphoria. You submit a personnel action form. Mr. Wells is going to hire Ryan Kroger. And then all of you around the table are either notified or have to approve it, right? So there's different steps. And Mr. Wells will get dinged at least within this time, 5 to 7 times of where his PAF is at. But all of our principals are busy, our directors are busy. Where are these people? I've got 15 notifications. And sometimes, you know, like, let's say Dr. Barnes is out at a conference, he doesn't check. So it's at his checkbox. And so, you know, they wanted them yesterday. We have to call him and say, hey, can you get in and approve PAFs? We just got to work at getting better on the process.
Stock.
I was going to say, it's going out to everybody at one time.
We do the same thing at my job. We do it in paper, and that folder goes from door box to door box, and it can come to a stop if somebody is out on a case or even 2 days off or calling in sick, and we need a guy in that spot now, but he can't get past this guy.
Yeah, that's the bureaucracy that we have to address to the part of this.
Absolutely.
Sarah Moore is not going to happen.
That's right.
So, as far as other November goals, reviewing and updating procedures to ensure alignment with policies, we're updating the Administrative Procedures Handbook. We're moving to an A to Z format online.
Yeah, I remember when Tammy did that. She showed y'all that A to Z format for teaching and learning. We're doing the same thing. So, it's just like a big list of topics. So, like when you click on A to Z, you can go.
And this is what we currently use, Ascender, FiveSite, PIMS, TASB, HR Services, and Frontline. These are all currently tools that we use, but we're going back through and making sure that we haven't missed anything, that we can use the tool more effectively, because these are all heavy-duty tools.
Mm-hmm. Frontline's not everybody, though. Right? So
they are.
That's the thing. But FiveSite, so I think we showed y'all, I want to say it was a year or two ago, We use FiveSite for some of our analytics, and that basically allows you to look at all these different districts and what they do. There's FiveCast. Kevin and I have a meeting with them next week to look at the different suite of options that they have. It's really...
They were bought by Frontline.
They were bought by Frontline, too. So, but anyway, we're looking at ways so we can expand that, and they work at a different analytical level. So, go ahead, Mark.
6 month goals. These are mid-February completions. So we're going to be working on ways to identify strategies to maintain a stable workforce. We're going to make sure that all personnel records are complete and accessible. We currently use Yellow Folder. It's an all right tool for right now. I don't know if it's an all right tool for the future. Implement systems to ensure records retention schedule is current and to facilitate purging, archiving, retention of records. Like the I-9s are something you really have to stay on top of. And we do a good job with that, but you know, there's always definitely room for improvement.
We need to refine the teacher transfer process, especially as we continue to grow, to make it a year-round teacher transfer process, especially whenever we have to pull people from one campus to another based on growth. Just today, Carrie called me. Her fifth grade numbers are booming on that campus. She's like, I need a teacher. And she's like a 25-to-1. And I know they're not in a 22-to-1 ratio, but once you get up above 25, I don't know how much learning is really going on in a classroom.
And I want to prepare the board for this. We talked about this before, but when we hit that hypergrowth, like as it happened in Alvin, like we were moving teachers like the first 4 to 6 weeks of school, and that can get...
And they're not happy.
They're not happy. Well, you know, and so what we talked about with our principals is when you're hiring someone, you're hiring them to work for SISD. And I need to understand that due to our situation, you can be moved. So that's why it's important that all campuses use the same language and we're all using the same practices.
Which goes right into the second bullet there.
So does it help to have individual principals doing the hiring?
What do you mean?
So if Greenleaf, somebody applies for Greenleaf, that,
I think just for the pace of it, but I see what you're saying. Would it help if they all interview the same people?
So I would feel that idea. This is where I work. If this is who's interviewing me.
I tell you who's not happy is the husbands of the teachers.
Because
in 15 years, I've had to move classrooms.
Yeah, and our current policy is last one.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
So just know that that's, and they'll, you know, but we'll do everything we can to make sure that that's a smooth process.
That's unavoidable. That streamlining your hiring process.
Yeah.
That's a good question. From one hiring source, which is Brian.
And increased methods to, so as Dr. Burke said, that led right into implementing a fair, unbiased, job-related screening process and ensure consistent application. Right now we've got, you know, 4 elementaries, 1 junior high, 1 high school. Now they all follow and use the same tools, but I don't know if they all use the same, you know, if they hire a teacher, are they all using the same questions? No, because I know in an interview they're going to, Duane's questions might spin off from what Dr. Davis's might be, which is what Carrie might use. So we just have to get more consistent because that is an open door for some grievances as we continue to hire or, quote, not hire the right person. And, of course, increased methods to disseminate information and process transactions. So, other areas of transition that we're currently doing, we're moving all appraisals online to Strive. That's a format in Eduphoria. We're going to possibly reallocate an FTE to full-time human resources. So there's some discussions going on with that. This week, Ms. Youngblood and I are meeting with the principals, the Dr. Barnes meeting with his principals. We're going to cover climate survey through Panorama. And as Dr. Burke said, this isn't an I gotcha, this isn't a what department you work in. It's, you know, these are good questions. Do you feel valued at work?
Yes.
You know, do you feel safe in your classroom? You know, these are things we want to know. And we're going to be at the next assistant principal meeting to cover documentation training.
Yeah, that's one thing I think with Diana coming in, she and Dr. Barnes have been working to really bolster our AP meetings and growth and all that, and so that's going a lot better. I think that's it's really a lot of times they're on the front line for, you know, employee complaints, student complaints, and we want to make sure that they're consistent.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I
should,
sure.
Can you go back for a second?
Yes, ma'am. One more?
Oh, no, it's actually appraisals. What do you mean by appraisals? Because you don't do yearly appraisals, right?
Well, yes, we on some staff we do, but as we get into TIA later, we're going to have to probably move to yearly appraisals.
Performance review type appraisal?
Because of the money that will be tied.
Oh, with the incentive?
Yes. So, but this is just going to be an online resource. I've already loaded in Ms. Veronica's department in English and in Spanish. So her appraisals are in Strive now. I'm going to be uploading transportation this week. So these are just things that we're just trying to get in there to make it easy. So, you know, for front office staff or their
nurses, secretaries, just uploading it all in there, so it's one easy place for principals and directors to go to.
Will you be doing a, if you do move to a full staff appraisal, will you be doing like a self-appraisal and then will there also...
It's a self-appraisal and then performance and then a meeting.
Oh, and is there, one thing that I just found a disparity is that every division does things a little different. Mm-hmm. And so will there be a consistency type training? Because, you know, you wouldn't, I'll give you an example. In IT, everybody's five. Everybody's five. Nobody's less than a five, everybody's a five. But over in legal, it's very, very hard to be a four, right? And so that makes people in legal want to leave and go over to IT. So will there be some sort of training overall for consistency in how you evaluate?
There's going to have to be, and I'll tell you why. Because, once again, going back to TIA, once you're about to start tying money into appraisals, there's your grievance alley. Because now, Ms. Soto, I know she goes and has margaritas with this guy after work. She gave him, you know, all fives. She doesn't like me. In fact, she comes in my classroom three times a week on my walkthroughs, and she gave me needs improvement. So now I'm out of the $7,000 of TTIP or TIA. So we're gonna have to have those.
I struggled a little bit this year with the online. We started using some of the campuses that are doing appraisals, where everybody gets the consistent message.
So yeah, like Dr. Barnes had brought in responsive ed for the T-tests for the teachers, and so they understand and input their goals and strategies.
Trying to eliminate that one principal student, one lady, one
principal student.
So they all kind of get
all right, so remember I skipped last meeting because we were coming up to this. I'm going to go through this very quickly. I know pizza's starting to set in and everything, so I can see everybody's like, okay. So we'll try to make this a little more accurate. All right, so balance scorecard, we're looking on priority two down there. So, again, I talked with Greg earlier last week. Greg was supposed to be here tonight. We had talked about him coming back and doing some governance work. We're going to punt that to the next semester, just a while. So, again, remember, this is a 21 through 25 balance scorecard. And the reason we've gone to this is we did our strategic direction. We had that in place. But, you know, it's kind of like that's our theoretical foundation, our values, our beliefs of why we're here. This is our measurables, right? And this is something I know we've needed. And so we're working to that end. So really, I'm just going to go through the strategic priorities and kind of tell you where we are. So the performance goals, so design intentional professional learning aligned strategic direction. We're doing really well with that. I mean, we're starting to see a lot of that come to fruition in conversations with staff, talking about that strategic direction go up. There you go. Oh, we moved over.
It's
being glitchy. So super one design, well, that was the last one. Okay,
I'll let you handle it.
I don't know if I can do any better, but...
Okay, build capacity, support, increase staff engagement. So we know from our spring surveys that our staff engagement was low. Now, we don't know why. Was it because of their working situation at the campus level? Was it because of COVID? Was it general dissatisfaction? So those client surveys we're getting ready to send out, we hope, will give us that sort of insight into that. So Panorama is one that kind of measures that against national survey data, so we'll have a lot of data to measure that against. So once we see that, we'll say, okay, well, here's an issue, like we'll see by campus, you know, how do employees feel, and that will give, the reason we're doing it now is so that when we come back in January, we'll be able to take some positive steps towards that, right? That's the whole purpose of that.
How do you define staff engagement? Because you said it was low, so what were you...
Well, satisfaction with their job. You know, satisfaction with their profession, satisfaction with working conditions, leadership, you know,
all those things, part of, you know, staffing.
Yeah, and so we're good to have met several times to kind of refine the questions to make sure that we're, you know, and we'll have a series of these surveys.
It's actionable.
Yes,
yeah,
it's actionable.
Questions from our actionable.
Yeah. And staff well-being, like keep teachers teaching, right? Like we've got to focus on that. So Brian's work with our employee wellness committee, again, looking at what are some things that we are doing currently, that we need to keep doing, what are some things we need to stop doing. And I'm going to go a step beyond the Employee Wellness Committee and through our campus design teams, we're going to have targeted meetings with our teachers to ask the same kind of questions I ask our people in cabinet. Like, what do we need to do? Like, think outside of the box, think innovatively, like,
you know, with our profession, what are some things that are really weighing you down that we need to either adjust or stop doing? All right, I mean, is it, I mean, there's a wide variety of things, right? I mean, and that's kind of what led to our discussion about a potential 4-day work week. Like, is that something that it would probably be very good for our teachers, but would it be good for our students and community? So you have to weigh those things against each other.
Well, would the students go to school 4 days a week? Would it be a 4-day school week?
So what we talked, yeah, that's what we talked about.
Okay, I didn't know if you meant like it would be, no, hey, you're not going to be athletics and then athletic, no, coaches or, you know, what I'm saying.
What we talked about was a 4-day week with Mondays being the day that, because we're already off 9 Mondays. Mm-hmm. So there's 31 total Mondays in our calendar. So we have to find that space to make up for. So we're getting ready to roll out a survey. And this, I'm telling you all this because we're not saying we want to do it. We're going to ask people, do you like our current calendar with the fall break, blah, 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 blah? Yes, no, or undecided. Do you like our traditional calendar with the spring break in March? Yes, no, undecided. You know, several districts are moving towards a 4-day week for teacher retention and financial reasons. Would you be in support of this, or would you like the district to continue to discuss this? Yes, no, maybe in the future. That's really, I don't want y'all to get that and say, oh, God, they're doing a 4-day work. That's not what we're doing. We're just really trying to think about.
When you ask them that question, are you prefacing it or like, no, we're not going to be asking you to work until 6 p.m.?
No.
Because if it were me, yeah, looking at that, I'd be like, well, I'm not going to work till 6 and get my 40, you know. No,
but I mean, so you'd be surprised. There are people that say, I would work,
there's some doing that anyway. There's some people staying that are staying until 6 o'clock every night.
That's what we're
at. Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of things to talk about, but we're just, what I charge other people with is just saying, think broadly, because we're not in the same, we can't think about things the way we used to think about them. We just can't. I mean, it's changed.
You're going to put the spot in the survey for them to answer how to better serve them?
In the climate surveys, I think there are some open response questions.
Not in the
poll about the calendars. We don't want to
mess up on the climate survey.
Yes. On the climate survey?
Yes.
Yes, there are. I don't know specifically going to ask how to better serve you, but we can.
Can we do that?
Well, I think, isn't there some in there?
Yeah, there's, but I don't know exactly what the open question is.
You want the questions to be actionable.
Yeah.
So that's why you have to control them to a point like, you know, if it's yes, no, then okay, what's the next one that can have an action, you know?
I think that's it.
I know.
Oh.
So we're still
open in the responses.
Yeah. Okay. So this is kind of the work that we did from cabinet the other day, just, you know, how do we, you know, work on these things. But again, the next step is climate survey, and then we're gonna start meeting with those campus design teams with that piece of it.
So the survey will identify what campus though?
Yeah, we're done by campus.
That's one of the reasons that we're Lloyd and I are meeting with the principals, because we don't want them shocked by this, but it's like, look. Like, if I were the leader of that campus, I'd want to know. You would want to know what your people are thinking.
Yeah. Would your, are y'all
if you care, are you
survey or the campus principal?
No, it's principal district.
Panorama. So that becomes from the campus principal, so that it doesn't look like we're singling them out.
No, because I think you have the trust issues on that board. Mm-hmm. Even there's probably
the higher that comes.
Yeah. And it's kind of true, because
but just on the...
Yeah, and I mean, I'll probably send the message out with the survey and just say, we need your feedback, you know, we want to make sure we're getting better. I promise you, I'm not looking at these and trying to find out who said what. I think
that's important, because I think staff trust you. I truly believe that staff trust you. I don't think staff trust their immediate leadership in some cases.
Yeah,
so I think that's just important.
I think it's important that they know the board is very It's interesting now, like, obviously in my day job, I'm more of on the front line.
Yeah.
At this level. But we get the surveys and stuff, and for a long time, people didn't understand. Being at this level, I understand now, it's not our good management sending those surveys out to us. It's the higher level.
It's
so much higher than the organization.
So the only way that I know to earn that trust is to take their feedback and do something with it. It's just like when Dr. Barnes met with the supervisory kids at Timberlake's the other day,
they put in, he had a student come up to him and say, hey, you know, last year we talked about, you know, we want more activities and art, and this year we're doing it, so thank you. So, you know, just that
There's
matters.
A student advisory group at Timberlake?
He runs all the elementary student advisory group, so he meets with each elementary campus, Daniel is a junior high, and I do the high school.
Yeah.
So I have a separate one coming up. So, all right, mine's application based, though. I'm going to have to apply. So anyway, that's kind of where we are on the Yes, I'll sort of these. I'll provide another update at the November meeting. So just as we continue to work through this.
Dr. Burke, I tried to get Honor to apply for yours.
She's like, no.
She told me where to go. Have you lost your mind? Yeah.
Are you doing anything student-based
that's
right now?
No, that's more my student advisory council piece. Is
where that's the whole student piece?
Not all of it. I mean, we will be doing student surveys. We've done those before in the past. We'll roll out another one in the spring. Right now, we're kind of looking at, do we want to stay with Panorama or do we want to go to another platform? So the climate surveys we're getting ready to do is kind of our last thing with Panorama, but we'll do spring student surveys as well. What I did with my high school kids was we took the learner profile. And we did a gallery walk, and I asked them, we took each one out, like, you know, what does it mean to be, self-motivated, confident, and so they each had a piece of paper, and I said, where do you see examples of this in your classwork or on your campuses or through your activities? And some of them couldn't answer it. It means we're not doing it, or we're not talking about it. So we're going to continue that work, we're going to explore some service projects, but we're also building out a leader profile. In BLT, like what are the qualities and attributes that our leadership should possess? And then after we do that, our next step is an educator profile. So our profiles for all these, we've done a principal one, you know, we did that, so yeah, that's the next step. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Three major initiatives headed our way, TIA, T-Class, and healthcare. So teacher incentive alignment with cohort E. So basically, two ways for the teachers to get the money: national board certification or local designation system. National board certification is a lot like getting a master's degree in a sense, but if you do that, you're automatically recognized at the lowest level in TIA, and you're going to automatically get the money. Local designation systems have to be approved by not only the Texas Education Agency, they have to be approved through Texas Tech University. And there has to be measurable objectives. And the one thing that they love the most is STAR. So we have teacher focus groups that I've been meeting with since the school year began. We are bringing in some consultants to talk to us now about local designation systems. But we're also, you know, having the conversation with the National Board Cert. So those are two paths to money.
When does it, I know that we had a grace period with COVID. When does this take effect?
So application has opened up today for us. We still don't know which path we want to take, or there's lots of paths to take. It's not realistic to sit there in this system within our capacity and say, everyone's going to make money off this. You've got to start small and focused and build out.
This is going to create...
But I mean, when is the state, sorry if I didn't ask my question right, when is the state requiring that we have a designation and do all this?
So for us this year as cohort E, this is the year we fill out our application, we kind of say what we're going to do. So let's say I'm only focused on elementary math, third, fourth, fifth grade. Right, that's what I'm going to measure, and I'm going to use MAP testing, and I'm going to use STAR, and this is how I'm going to determine my growth and my designations. And then what will happen is next year is our data validation year, where we capture all of it, we send it off to Texas Tech says, yes, that's exactly right, that's exactly what we wanted, TA approves us, and then 23-24 people begin to get the money. Or they can get nationally board certified and be guaranteed.
So Brian, it'll allow you to only focus on one subject if you choose to?
If you choose to.
Oh, God, that's like pitting
And like I said, with the current constraints that we have, like, for example, if your assistant superintendent of curriculum is retiring in December and you're supposed to be working with them to build these systems, that's a pitfall for us. So,
gosh, that would be terrible to have.
And if we go with the national work certification, is that, I mean, so anybody, any teacher can go?
Yes, any teacher can, and it covers almost everything that we cover.
And it's their initiative at that point.
Yes, sir.
But the issue is that's harder probably to do. And so are we going to be losing teachers to Cleveland ISD who's just doing it via STAR? So there's that competition piece in there where we've got to say.
Oh, so they don't automatically, hold on. I thought that piece was, doesn't matter what your school district does, you go get this, you get this money.
Yes,
that's true.
Okay.
That's correct.
But what he's saying is there's more money in the local system.
Okay.
So.
Yes, but they're more apt to.
There's a greater reward, but of course, truly, who's, I don't know how many people are getting the big exemplary $10,000 checks. I don't know who's receiving that, you know.
I don't need
to
check for that, because that's
coming
from our budget, right?
No state money.
It is, okay.
It's
going to
be a spectacular Hindenburg.
So one day it will be the district's.
It will.
You can't.
Teachers
can't be a part of it.
I mean, it does not work. We already did this in the 80s, and now we're going to try to do it again.
Can some teachers get the National Board of Service?
They can.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that's what we decide to do, right?
I'm just trying to make sure.
No, I'm saying, but that the national board's not part of what we decide. That's regardless, right?
Well, I thought we had to pick an avenue.
Yes, and I think we might simply say something along the lines of, and we're not there yet, but whatever route we choose to start with, and once again, I'm recommending narrow and focused. Because if you start broad and wide, it will never get approved. And all we've done is spin our wheels and waste our time. If we start focused on a certain set, and then just say along the way, we recognize any national board certification as recognized, that will help us.
Yeah, if our application doesn't include a pretty strict adherence to SAR, then it'll be approved. Mm-hmm. So we've got to really think about that.
That's completely against the
community
based accountability.
I mean, I've been telling y'all there's a part of the plan. This is part of
the chart.
No. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, these are conversations I don't even have. I can see some merit behind the academies. Okay, I can see a little bit of merit there. But this, anyway, we're going to do what we're required to do. We're going to try to make the best out of it and adhere to our values, but we need to be talking to our legislators about this. This is a mic and a half. I did this in Dallas. And it only worked for about a year or two, but I'm going to do it again. So you
mentioned grievances before. At some point, teachers could say, you haven't even given me an opportunity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because you're only focused on, okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
Buckle up.
Yeah, they could actually say, well, hey, Suzanne, Jackie, you don't go have margaritas all the time, and Jackie teaches reading, and so we're only going to allow this in the reading session.
Jason, cause some problems with those margaritas with Suzanne.
Yeah. Question on that shoe. Yep. I mean, you get it 1 year, not about it next year.
No, it's good for 5 years.
Once you get it.
Once you get it, you're locked in. My understanding of it at this time is that if you get it, it is good for, on a local designation, it's good for 5 years. And I believe it's 5 years also for, because it goes on your certificate. But then my question is, okay, so what if Dan knocks it out of the park year one? And then he gets $10,000, and then every year after that, his kids decline. Why are we still paying him the rock star money? So there's
all of this money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that money's a per year money. So it's not a $10,000 one time deal. It's a per year.
No, it's per year.
So if that's 23-24, I guess giddy up time, right? Because
yeah.
It really, I mean, 23-24 is not that far away.
No, ma'am.
For to make all, because especially if we decide national board, then the teachers have time to do the work.
We've had plenty of meetings, and like I said, we're at the point now that we're bringing in consultants to talk to us about a local designation system. Once I get the information that I feel that the teacher focus group and I are comfortable with, I will be bringing it to the board for presentation.
Are the teachers better prepared to do the
national board? I mean, so that they can go ahead and do the work?
Truthfully, my thought is on the national, I think what they do is, and I, you know, I didn't want to hide anything from them. I gave them, because this went through the state, the TEA, they gave us, like, if you were approved for local designation system, this would be your money, right? And so because we still have a rural tag on us, our money is quite impressive, with Greenleaf being the highest. If you were an exemplary teacher at Greenleaf, you would get a lot of money. But realistically, okay, at this point, how many people are getting that throughout the state, right? And, you know, it's just building a local system. It's myself and Tammy, and soon to be myself and the new person, whoever that may be, working with, on top of our other full-time jobs. So that's why I think the consultant is going to be crucial to kind of help us, guide us, and where we want to focus our efforts and our energy.
So what I think what you're saying, Mike,
yeah, please.
Is once they saw how much money is in the local system, it really doesn't lend itself to doing the board certification. It's really hard to get national board certification. It is. So I think that's a question you can go back and ask them, like, ask that consultant, like, if we don't choose this as a designation, what does it look like for our teachers to come in to get that certification? Just so that they're aware of that.
There's also programs that we can do with them about, yeah, potentially, okay, maybe busting up some money. Teachers can apply for national board certification, and maybe we can, like, grant some scholarships and pay for the micro-credentials to get them through national board, with them signing memorandum of understanding that they're going to work for us for a number of years once upon completion. So we have lots of avenues to discuss. Yeah.
Have I mentioned that just 10 months after Tammy bails, I'm not going to be on the board anymore?
Let's keep going. Come on.
All right, C-Class. Part of ESSER, we have have applied for and received preliminary approval on two grants on Decision 4 and 5. So, Dan, this one's on paraprofessionals. Decision 4 allows us to pay for up to 2 years of college and or alternative certification for up to 6 paraprofessionals. Requirement is they have to have a minimum of 60-plus hours so that they can complete within the 2-year time frame. I've already met with every paraprofessional in the district. We have around 10 plus who kind of meet those requirements already or will be ready to meet them by this spring. So we're going to be, once we get our official notice of grant approval, we're going to be moving forward, and we will have them sign a memorandum of understanding that
so the grant pays for 6.
Six.
Can we pay for the other 4?
What's that?
Can we pay for the other 4? Or is that not allowed through the grant process? It's a question. I can think about that. So just not.
Yeah. So I can tell you that.
So how would you narrow it down otherwise? I mean, is it an application based?
Let me ask another question.
I would look at longevity within the district.
Yeah, but how far? We're Title I, so there's a lot of their loans could be forgiven too. So,
This is the way I think you're going to start.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need to look at every revenue source, right? If 4 of those 6
can already have them waived, then they're forgiven. Let those be forgiven.
But they need to know, because a lot of teachers qualify for it, never apply.
Yeah. Well, and the other part, they could go to any Title I school. They could, you know, yeah, what I mean? So we lose them to that unless we have some kind of a, unless we contribute to them in some way. You know what I mean? And so they can sign something to stay with us. Because otherwise, they could just go to any. There's
I think we need to really continue that conversation with all of the money girl peers.
That's important. Because they can pay us back and retire us on time.
They really
leverage
all opportunity.
Yeah. And then Decision 5 allows us
10% interest.
Allows us to pay up to $25,000 to student teachers with a maximum of 20 per year to build them into the pipeline. We already have an agreement with SAM in place.
So when does that start? That's now?
We will start paying them this spring.
I have a young lady at SAM who wants to be a teacher.
Does Helen come to us?
she made her.
I have not.
Yeah, Kayla Brown, she wants to teach here, and she, this is her last semester, December. So if you haven't heard from her, you need to be hearing from her. And that's a good incentive.
Yeah.
Why are you looking?
Email him so he's.
My eyes drying out quickly. Last one is a major one that you will have to take action on. That's Senate Bill 1444. Districts cannot run two separate health care plans. You either must choose the alternative health care plan you offer, or you choose TRS Active Care. So in December, you guys will have to vote whether in or out. And if you're out, you are out for 5 years and cannot get back into TRS. If in, you can choose to leave after a year. So if we said, well, we're not ready for that, if we're not, you know, we're not ready to leave active care yet, well, let's say by next December, we might be ready to leave.
Before you ask the question, you know the answer.
Okay. Yes.
I know you're well enough. Let me find it.
I sent it to you today.
You did.
And how many other emails did I send you today?
One second. Can you know what that is? Let's start.
How about this? I'm going to go to my sent.
Do I know what I'm looking for? How many people are enrolled in active care? How many people are enrolled in the alternative? Because we already offered one through FPS. And I can't find it.
But are we leaving it up to TRS to someone else to do the presentation so that we know what the majority, or what if it's only a,
Okay. So Brian, okay. DHS, whatever.
So the alternative health care, Texas School Health Benefit Plan, we have 253 employees enrolled. TRS Active Care, we have 183. And then you've got a number. You have 229 employees who are most likely on their spouse's health care plan.
So you and Jessica are going around to every
campus and department doing a presentation on the Texas School Health Benefit Plan and then what we know of TRS. TRS has not released any information to us. They haven't told us what their rates are going to be. I can tell you, since I have been in public education, every year their rates have gone up, and now the pool is decreasing. So how can it not go up again?
So we're supposed to meet this morning with FDS, and we rescheduled that to talk about they're going to give us some information about other districts, what they're considering. Now, there are some districts that are still self-funded, but they kind of closed that, and we can't do that anymore. Alvin was self-funded, we were there, really good rates. So I think this is going to be a major, this has major implications. And you see how they're setting it up. I mean, you know, they're trying to force districts to stay with TRS because they're saying, well, you can leave after a year if you don't like it.
And how's it going to, are they going to dangle some kind of care for retirees and that, you know, because that's all.
Yeah, so they're meeting with everyone, and we're going to do an employee survey.
Bring you all the findings.
Yeah.
And if you even want, I can have FBS come out and present to us in December at the December meeting. So,
is that one more thing? People are going to be mad at us? Not as a board? Like, because we get to, I mean, you know, because then there's still 183 people that are going to be mad.
You have to make a decision on if we stay in or not. The board must know.
But if we wait a year?
If we stay, we cannot do both. And we cannot do both.
Yeah.
So if we make the decision to stay in TRS, we are in for a year and we can leave after a year. If you make the decision to not, and they don't let us make the decision, they ask to go to the board. So y'all think we have to make the decision by December?
Yes, sir.
So
I mess with people's livelihood. I like to know what everybody wants.
But it's not everybody. That's the bad part about it.
Yes,
like
it's one third.
You know, a third that will be mad at us.
It's a huge decision.
Yeah.
And no matter what, you're not going to win.
We're the smallest government entity. We're going to get slammed.
But, I mean, all you can do is take the survey.
I know, I'm just lying because it's like...
You know, like, for every person who has complained about the alternative plan, I bet someone who loves the alternative plan.
It's true, it's awful.
Yeah, so...
I'll tell you though, like, yes, we've had our fair share of people criticizing, but it's... When I'm talking to the superintendent, Iowa Heights, and she's in tears because she's like, well, there's one set of parents that come up and say, my child's not going to wear a mask, they're not going to do this, and they say it, and this side of the room claps, and then somebody else gets up and talk, and they say, y'all good enough, and this side claps, we don't know what to do. We've been pretty fortunate in terms of people coming to the meeting. Think about it, the last 2 weeks, we've had more people present than probably try to accept it than I've been like. So it's like, I think our community does trust that. You know, and I know it's tough on it all, and we want to make sure that we take as much of that onus off of you as we possibly can, so we're going to do all the legwork to make sure.
Absolutely.
It's hard.
And trust me, I will communicate to everyone that the state is putting this gun to our head. This isn't the school board making this decision.
But the school board has to make a decision for this staff.
But the state forces.
I know, it's BS, because I'm not qualified to make a decision about your retirement. I'm not.
Well, it's not retirement, it's just their health.
Sorry.
Just their health.
Just their health. You know?
So that's...
I'm even more qualified now, thank you.
Well, and someone knew already, we'd already have made that decision, so they would come in, hey, this is the... And I wonder if that's a reason to come in to a district or not. I mean, all of those little things that make a difference.
I know. Yeah. I know. And I'll get a list together of districts that I know are leaving. So you're aware of that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So, anyway, that's all I have. Thank you guys so much.
I want to see that slide about the teacher incentive because I want to hear Cole Carey, Kayla, right?
More HSA money.
Okay. Up to $25,000 to see the teachers to build them into the pipeline. So if they're already, so they haven't signed an agreement with us, we would have this option as a bonus type thing? What is this?
No, if you're a student teacher, and you've got a choice between, you know, Burk ISD or Splendora ISD. Sorry. And I can student teach there for no money, or I can come to Splendora where they're going to pay me $25,000 to student teach, you know, and I'm a part of Sam Houston. I'm coming in.
Gotcha.
We have to have governance meetings with Sam 3 times a year as part of it, but they're... Anything I can do to get a student teacher in here, I'm going to do it every time.
One other thing I want to keep y'all up to speed on, so you know, we hired the additional nurse. Our COVID cases are next to nothing. We want to keep her on, that additional nurse on through the rest of the year, just in case we have a spike, or, you know, we've heard that Daphne's...
Oh, Daphne told me she's leaving. Ready, yeah.
She's taking all of her days, so we feel like it's in the best interest to just keep that additional nurse on. If y'all are... I mean, that's just...
Nurses are
already fine. So, I mean, there's a budgetary...
Yeah, because Daphne, she's not coming back after December, right?
I don't know what's happening.
She is not informed HR of that.
Yes, that's not been informed.
We haven't had a little too much that night, but I'm pretty sure she told me she wasn't coming back after.
Well, then there you go. So then we won't have an additional nurse.
Exactly. Out drinking margaritas will do it.
I was told last night I did fireball. I'm like, I did not do fireball.
Did y'all have a chance?
We're doing all this, and just let us know. It's your favorite time of the year. We get to pick.
Can we do Christmas card?
And actually,
and healthcare.
And healthcare. The whole one meeting. We are actually choosing 6 Christmas cards. It will be one from every campus.
Oh, good. Okay.
So you still have to vote, but you're doing 6 different ones.
Can I ask?
Yes.
We have 2 large presentations on this. Is there any way we can separate?
Which one do you say is the large one?
This one's not happening.
Like the regional management's not happening.
Yeah, that's happening. We're only having the band.
He's going to limit the number. We can talk to him in November. That's the November one.
Are you talking about recognizing the FFA kids?
Remove the band.
It won't be as long as it was.
No, we're not doing a regional until December. This is the November. I promise you, he is not going to have more than 20 minutes. I'm going to come in there and take him off stage.
I know, I'm good with the
already
And that's what I'm saying, I want to give him time.
But.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to meet with.
Oh, no, he'll have plenty of time. Oh, I hate that they didn't get the top five.
I know, I mean, so they, and Wade was the one texting them.
Yeah.
And saying, well, they're third heading into the, and I'm sorry, my day job fell asleep.
That's, no, it's okay.
It was a long night.
But that's further than we've been before, right?
What's that?
I mean, that's further than we've been before.
We've been there before.
Did we adjourn officially?
Apparently.
8:11.
You got really tired.
Good night, y'all, thank you.
Good night, Brian, thank you, hope your audience.
We go.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's.
Big bye-bye.
Yeah, but that's still, I mean, what an honor, but still, I would really like to know.
I know.
Yeah, kind of figured what it is.
So, there's other things, like, y'all let me know. Good to go.
Thank you. Alan, you have a couple.
And I'll bring y'all some options.
Yes.
Policy.
To have or not to have, to have.
Oh, sorry, damn.
But with some.
I want to say some pizza.
I don't want pizza.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Oh, yeah, no worries.